Hey, I'm Mark Maron with Stu Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today's Tuesday, a dance of summer in honor of the new Bush poll numbers.
Yeah.
Yay. Plus, we'll have Mr. Bush's presidential palm pilot and Mrs. Streisand's liberal agenda for the day. Right now, though, Sue Ellicott has the day off, so it's just me and Mark Riley.
Yo.
Mark and Mark in the morning.
Hey.
Yeah. What's going on, buddy?
It's a beautiful day.
Man, I went to, you know, it's a sad thing, but not a sad thing, kind of an encouraging thing, is that, you know, the Dunkin' Donuts I got to at 3 in the morning to pick up my juice, my Go Juice. There's always this one woman sitting there in the window who's clearly, you know, out of her mind. I mean, she's always there. She's talking to herself. She's got stacks of yellow pads and newspapers. And, you know, her hair is, like, done up in, like, a bouffant. And, you know, but she's not that old, but she's clearly a crazy person.
Katie Couric?
No. But the thing... The thing is, now I get out of this car that I take every day to get my coffee, and the crazy lady has started to acknowledge me.
Uh-oh.
Which is always a weird moment where they look at you and they're like, oh, yes, you're all part of me. You're part of my plan of things. You now fit into my little world. And we shared greetings, and then, you know, it was just a little uncomfortable, but I'm sure by the end of the month I will be chatting with her.
Whatever you do,
yeah.
Do not tell her you work in radio. You know why?
Why?
Because then she will construct an entire scenario about how you are beaming into her apartment and into her brain, and you're making her do things, you're making her think things, you're making her vote against George W. Bush.
And then I make her my publicist.
Yes.
The crazy woman from the Dunkin' Donuts becomes my publicist because she thinks I'm talking directly to her through her brain.
There you go.
And I'm pretty juiced up on the Go Juice here. Also, my you know what I watched last night? Did you ever watch that movie Adaptation?
No.
Charlie Kaufman movie. How genius is that movie? I've seen it like 5 times now, and I laugh more now than I did initially. It's just genius. My wife made me go see Dodgeball 2 nights ago. Not genius. Definitely not genius. But she likes those movies. She's like, Dodgeball. She's like, it was genius. And I'm like, what are you, 12? And I realize, yeah, she is. She's 12. My wife is a little bit younger than me, but she's not 12, but she's like 11 years. I don't want to sound like a perv.
It grossed 30 long, didn't it?
Yeah. It did, but there's funny parts in it, but it's not as funny as, like, if Will Ferrell were in it. And now on a less funny note, but equally as a rejoicing note, and I think we're going to talk about this a lot today, is that clearly Bush is definitely, his poll numbers are going down, and he's clearly losing the war on terror, you know, and people are starting to see that. They're starting to believe that. This guy got no bump in the polls.
None.
You know, from the Reagan death. Maybe a point, but it didn't last long, right? Which goes to prove James Galbraith's theory that the slow decline in poll numbers has no bearing, has nothing to do with what happens in reality. It's just the slow decline in people's ability to believe this president's BS. Even in the almost did it. Even in the paper today, I get excited.
Uh-oh.
Chris was like, no, not already.
No.
Even in the paper today, man, if you just look at the paper today, you've got, like, there's a new Al-Qaeda, you know, King Terror guy in Saudi Arabia. There's insurgency, a new Islamic insurgency, radical Islam in Thailand. There are radical Islamists in Chechnya who assassinated somebody, okay? And then, like, the weird thing is that Ashcroft, Paul Krugman wrote a op-ed piece today.
Oh, man, did you read that?
Yeah, in a small town of Noonday, Texas, FBI agents discovered a weapons cache containing fully automatic machine guns, remote-controlled explosive devices disguised as briefcases, 60 pipe bombs, and a chemical weapon, a cyanide bomb big enough to kill everyone in a 30,000-square-foot building. This was in April, all right? This was in April, and it was sort of put under the mat. Ashcroft didn't draw much attention to it. This was a white supremacist, possibly, all right? I remember when this happened, but he didn't make any issue of it. It didn't stay national news for very long, right? And right here, the discovery of the Texas cyanide bomb should have served as a wake-up call. 9/11 has focused our attention on a threat from Islamic radicals, but murderous right-wing fanatics are still out there, and they don't do anything about that because they're potential Bush voters. Clearly, it's that the reason why this wasn't brought to the attention is they didn't want to alienate part of their personal nuclear bomb voting base.
I give Paul Krugman a lot of credit, though, because he did acknowledge in the beginning of that piece that he had already named John Ashcroft the worst attorney general in the history of the United States.
That was the last piece.
Yeah. And it's true. I mean, he's not speaking out of school, at least not from my perspective, Mark. I don't know about you, but this guy is truly scary.
he's scary. You know, he's repressive. He's secretive. And what makes him the most scary to me is that he's ineffectual. He's ineffectual in his ability to deal with things, you know, in a legitimate legal way. I mean, he's very good at keeping secrets and sort of manufacturing ideologies of sorts and not, you know, and deciding what the public should and shouldn't know. But he's what am I saying, Mark?
Well, let me tell you what you're saying.
Yeah.
On the one hand, you have Jose Padilla, who was never found in possession of any explosives, no bombs, nothing. He was allegedly a conspirator in that regard, not a possessor.
Right.
This clown was a possessor.
Had all the goods.
He had the bomb.
Right.
Which one got the most publicity? Jose Padilla got the publicity. That's John Ashcroft manipulating his own office. Because remember, this is the Justice Department that's affecting all these arrests. They are supposed to be the point people in the domestic war on terror. And as far as John Ashcroft's Justice Department is concerned, these supremacists, whoever they are, these militias, the rest of these people, do not pose a threat. Otherwise, we'd know about them.
Yeah, I think it's worse than that, because I think honestly he doesn't want to alienate them on some level, because I really believe they are part of the Republican base. And I also think that he also just wanted to bolster the agenda of the, you know, global fear thing, the terrorist global fear thing. And it's not working anymore.
Well, you know, later on we're going to discuss a Supreme Court ruling that gives John Ashcroft and law enforcement a tool that they arguably did not have before with regard to putting people away. But we'll get to that a little bit later. The word for the day today, by the way, is do-over. Because today is the day that the State Department comes out with the numbers they should have come out with back in, what was that, March, April?
Yeah, the real numbers.
The real
numbers. Not the cooked numbers from negligence.
Yeah, not the Play-Doh numbers.
Yeah, do we have that soundbite, Chris? Do we have Powell, or we didn't put it in? We do?
Oh, we do. We have Colin Powell now.
This is last week, right?
Yeah, this is when the State Department essentially got caught with his pants down. Henry Waxman had been saying for months that the terror statistics, which were very positive, that the State Department put out, which said that terror incidents had dropped to the lowest level in 34 years.
Right.
And it turned out not to be true. And some people said, well, you know, maybe the Republicans were kind of cooking the books there so that, you know, Bush's terror numbers would maintain an artificial high. And here's what our Secretary of State said about that.
It's a numbers error. It's not a political judgment that said, let's see if we can cook the books. We can't get away with that now. Nobody was out to cook the books. Errors crept in.
Can't get away with that now.
Can't get
away with that now. But see, people don't realize is that cooking the books can just mean omitting.
That's right.
I mean, that's, you know, it's not just, you know, making up false numbers. It's like, oh, that's an oversight in our favor that helped us, you know, fuel our agenda. Whoops. We're going to have to correct that now that you've brought it to our attention.
Well, yeah. And in this case, it was like omitting about half of the terror numbers for 2003.
We don't even know how high they are. But, you know, judging by these polls, general public, we have an ABC Washington, it's a Washington Post poll that just shows that it's not sticking anymore. You know, people aren't buying it. They don't feel safer. They don't feel good about the economy. We'll go over all those poll numbers with you in just a second. You can give us a call if you want, 866-303-2270. We got the President's Palm Pilot coming up. We got those poll numbers. And we got more and more stuff here on Air America Radio. Past the hour, Mark Maron here, Morning Sedition. Me and Mark Riley are sitting here on Air America Radio. Sue Ellicott is off today. We have a blog now. We have morningsedition.com, so you can we're up and at it in the blog world. 866-303-2270 is our phone number. We're taking your calls now. We're also about to reveal that, look, man, I mean, this poll is amazing. ABC News, Washington Post poll results for 621.
Hold it!
Yes, sir.
Where's your drum?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Whoa!
What? There it goes. The poll numbers. The candidate more trusted to handle terrorism, 47% Bush, 48% John Kerry.
I think that's the first time it's been like that, right?
It has been like that.
The first time Kerry's beaten him.
Yep, it's up by 1%. They're riding right on this line, but with other stuff, man, I mean, with other stuff, are you kidding? Trust to handle the economy, 50% with Kerry, 45% with Bush. International affairs, 51% with Kerry, 43% with Bush. Education, 50% with Kerry, 45% with Bush. Prescription drugs, 50% Kerry, 38%. Bush. That's a lot of the senior citizens who are getting screwed on their prescription prices.
Those cards aren't really doing a great deal of good. Remember those Medicaid cards they just started issuing at the beginning of the month?
Right.
Last month?
It's a sham. It keeps seniors beholden to this health plan, but it doesn't keep pharmaceutical companies from, you know, jacking their prices up whenever they want to.
It keeps the drug companies and the insurance companies filthy, filthy rich.
Yeah, at the expense of America's seniors. We got some calls coming in. Who do we got? We got Raj in Manhattan. How are you, Raj?
Hey, Raj.
Good morning, sir.
What's on your mind, sir?
Hey, it shows, bro, that we're going to win this election.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's coming. It's imminent.
He's going down, right?
No doubt. Are you kidding me? Listen, you cannot get away by telling too many times lies.
You're absolutely
Americans
right.
Americans are not that dumb.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Thanks for your call, man. Yeah, good talking to you. He's right, and that's what James Galbraith was saying. He's an economist out of Austin, Texas. His father was John Galbraith.
Kenneth Galbraith?
John Kenneth, yeah. But that doesn't make any difference. There's no reason. Like, that gives him credibility because his dad was a big economist guy, too. But he's always speculated. We've had him on the show a couple times that these poll numbers, they're not guided by things that happen in the world. Like, you know, like a great example is Reagan's funeral. He was really trying to glom on. Bush was really trying to glom on to the momentum of the Reagan legacy and the deification of Reagan and sort of like, you know, get the sort of proximity buzz.
And he couldn't even get that right.
No, it might have bumped a little bit for a day or two, but it didn't happen. And Galbraith is right that as people become more aware, more sensitive to the BS that this guy's been, you know, spewing and putting out there and the fear that he's creating, they're just going to slowly pull away from him. 866-303-2270.
You know, there's something else in this poll that people ought to pay very close attention to, Mark.
What's that, man?
It's the fact that people are paying very close attention to this election.
Right.
I mean, if you compare the numbers of people who are watching this very closely and closely compared to 2000, it's like a 30% bump up. Three quarters of Americans are actually watching, and this is, again, is according to this ABC News Washington Post poll. More than three quarters of those polled are following this election closely. More than a third are following it very closely. That speaks to high turnout.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is, I think, a net plus in all likelihood for the Democratic candidate.
Right.
And it also speaks to a good deal of concern about some of the Iraq. I don't care how much Bush talks about how the economy's bouncing back. Most people aren't buying it.
Right. And all the double talk and all these sort of like not prosecuting anybody for the, you know, intelligence mishaps and 9/11 commission, all this stuff, even though they're trying to spin it in terms of like, you know, they're trying to just stay on their message, which is Cheney saying there was a connection between terrorism and Iraq. Keep pushing it, that all the other evidence is swirling around out there. And people are starting to go, wow, these people they might really be lying. Mike in Japan, you got an issue with me, Mike?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to your comment earlier about that guy in Texas, the farmer who was found with all the bombs and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
I was thinking, I mean, I love your show. I listen to it every night.
It was kind of, can I just
home.
Say, Mike, before you're too hard on me, it was kind of a joke.
No, fair enough. Fair
okay,
enough.
Okay, okay.
I love your show, by the way.
Thank you very much.
But what I was going to say was that I think Janine Garofalo, I've noticed, does it as well, and she tends to paint the right with his real broad brush and say stuff like, well, he's probably some redneck racist out and whatever, plan to blow up government buildings or whatever, but assuming that they're all part of the Republican Party. And I always think of these, I'm from the Northwest originally.
I would never say redneck racist. I would say right wing.
That's Janine. But,
okay, go ahead.
But, I lost my train of thought.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, man. You're from Japan and you lost your train of thought.
You're from the Northwest. You're from the Northwest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, what I was going to say was, I think that they're grouped together with the Republicans, just like the Greens are grouped in together with the Democrats, something like that. They're people who are just alienated from the whole process, in fact. They're just tired of the government telling them that they can't homeschool their children, which I know you hate, and I've got some other stuff that I'd love to talk to you about that. But homeschoolers, you know, these militias off in the in the countryside who want their guns and are afraid the government's going to come seize them and so on. And I can see why they would think that, because the government's got all the arms, got all the weapons and all the power, and they're just taking and checking our reading lists and, you know, checking our library records and so on.
Yeah.
And I think there's actually a lot of potential links between people on the left and people, at least of the non-racist militia variety, on the right, to be quite honest.
Well, there's a weird place. There's a weird place where the left and right kind of meet, and I understand what you're saying, Mike. But you know, the truth of the matter is this administration, you know, given by what we covered a little bit last week, almost, you know, too much, was that, you know, they pander to this type of homeschooling, you know, extreme right, sometimes a fanatical Christian contingency. But I think you're right. There are people that are marginalized and are fighting for a separation, almost a secession from government, in that they don't want to pay taxes, they want to have the right to homeschool their kids, they want to be seen as, you know, true patriots that are not right or left, but almost a complete, you know, secessionist in a way.
Well, you know, Mike makes an interesting point in terms of saying that there is some commonality between the left and some of these militias. I'll give you an example. I know some people who are, I guess you would call, really hard leftists.
Right.
Who were really, found common cause with the whole Ruby Ridge people thing.
Right.
Saying essentially the government had no business going up there on the pretext that they did and shooting, you know, shooting people and shooting the guy's wife and the whole nine yards. There were I don't know how substantial they were, but a group of leftists who had a very serious problem with the government acting in that way.
The invasion of privacy, the invasion of rights, and then just killing people on basically suspicion and possession of firearms.
Exactly.
And Waco as well, cornering these people and making them, you know, freak out.
Yeah.
And cause a violent episode.
Now, all that having been said, a guy in Noonday, Texas with chemical bombs scares the bejesus out of me, and I'm 2,500 miles away from him.
And also the stuff that never got investigated was the anthrax that went to Tom Daschle's office and some of the American anthrax possibilities, that there is this faction in this country of radical right militias who are Americans, who see themselves as you know, gung-ho, ultimate real Americans, you know, who are out there and scheming and plotting. And they are against, some of them are against government in the way of taxes, as I said before. Mm-hmm. But I think that in terms of constitutional amendment and rights and, you know, right to bear arms and stuff, they would see that they are, you know, fighting for that. But the weird thing is that amendment was put in place to protect people from the government, you know, taking over their lives, right?
Well, yeah, and the thing that the militias have in common with the Christian right is a literal reading. In the case of Christians, it's the Bible. In the case of militias, it's the Constitution.
Exactly.
They have their own belief system about what the Constitution says and what the Constitution is supposed to mean, not just to them, but to everybody.
Yeah, and on that principle, just think about it. If they need to arm themselves against their government, if necessary, if they need to take the country back, they're going to have to find they're going to need some nuclear weapons, which is what the threat of the Islamic militants is that they're going to get hold of this stuff. And as far as the sort of in-house Cold War with the militias against the government, if they really want to arm themselves in an effective way against the government, they should be considered a threat on that level as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so
we'll see if we can get another phone call.
Oh, okay. Here we go. JJ in New Mexico, how are you?
Hey.
Hey, Mark Squared. How's it going?
All right, man.
Is this JJ or Tom?
Oh,
it's JJ.
No, it's
JJ. How you doing? How you doing, buddy?
JJ. Hey, good. Hey, I'm a truck driver, and I'm not home on the weekdays. I get home on the weekends.
Yeah.
And I want to make sure that my vote gets counted in the next election.
Okay.
I remember in Florida, they were saying something during the last election that absentee ballots weren't counted, stuff like that. So, I mean, should I stay home or should I do an absentee ballot?
Well, I think that, you know, I think that you should definitely vote. And I think that, you know, an absentee ballot, theoretically, they're supposed to count them. I mean, if things work properly, there's a record of the absentee ballots. They should be included. They should be counted. I mean, if all things, if we're to trust the process at all, which is hard, I know, you know, I don't know that you should be suspect. Well, of course he should be suspect.
No, what he should do is,
I'm talking like a public official. Of course your vote will be counted. I will count it myself, my friend.
Your local board of elections, contact them now. Still to come, the presidential Palm Pilot, Kerry slams Bush on science, and the all-important liberal agenda. Stay with us. This is Air America Radio.
3 past the hour. Good morning. This is Morning Sedition at Air America Radio. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley is here. Sue Ellicott is out. You can blog us now at morningsedition.com. You can email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com.
I'm glad you remember all that technical stuff, man, because it loses me. I'll give out the wrong email, the wrong blog, the wrong everything.
I can remember it, but I have no idea how to use it. None. I can email, but the whole blog thing's beyond me. Even on my own website, I used to have something where I could write my own stuff. And the pressure was just too daunting. Like, because if you don't do it for like a week, the stuff you wrote a week ago is just sitting there, and you're like, oh, no, I got to update my blog.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stay on top of it. Here's the presidential palm pilot for today. I just got it from my guy in the Oval Office who hacked into the president's schedule. 7 o'clock a.m., wake up, stay on message. Outer space should be privately owned. Get Halliburton on it. 9 a.m., listen to Clinton Book on CD. Become oddly aroused by his silky Arkansas accent. 11 a.m., move Guantanamo prisoners to Abu Ghraib and Abu Ghraib prisoners to Guantanamo just to mess with their heads. 1:20 p.m., meet the Prime Minister of Hungary. Good idea, let's eat. 1:30 p.m., eat. 3 p.m., write anonymous mean reviews of Fahrenheit 9/11 for RottenTomatoes.com. 3:30 p.m., Google myself, Lycos myself, Yahoo myself. Wait, half these sites are porn. 4 p.m., speak at White House Black Music Month reception. Tell Ja Rule and 50 Cent to chill. Peace out. 6 p.m., try on spacesuit for possible late November mission. We're leaving. 7 p.m., thank Gardner for helping me out of spacesuit again. 9 p.m., fall asleep listening to Clinton Book. Bill. Wow. Big day.
Black Music Month, huh?
I guess it is. I wish I had known.
Well, it is, but I mean, Bush has something to do with Black Music Month?
Yeah, he's got to.
The last time he was around any black people to sang was 4 years ago at the convention.
You think?
I'm just wondering what's going on here. John Kerry.
Yes, sir.
You remember him?
I do. He's running for president.
Senator John Kerry lashing out at the president for relying on ideology rather than the pursuit of science. The presumptive Democratic candidate was talking specifically about stem cell research, which Bush has limited in line with the wishes of his friends on the religious right. Kerry says he'd do no such thing as president.
I'm not going to let ideology and fear stand in the way. When America sees a problem or a possibility of greatness, it is in our collective character to set our sights on that horizon and not stop working until we get there.
Kind of Kennedy-esque a little bit.
Yeah, he sounds good, man. He's kicking it.
Well, he's on the stump. He was on the stump in Denver, and he cited other anti-science initiatives from this president. They included everything from censoring information about global warming to deleting information about condoms from government websites. And we talked to a guest about that the other day.
Well, he's got some people. He sort of stacked some people. There's a top advisor to the president, this guy Tom Coburn, who has publicly stated that American people should know the truth of condom ineffectiveness. He has W. David Hager, the author of a book called As Jesus Cared for Women, Restoring Women Then and Now. This guy has suggested prayer as a cure for premenstrual syndrome, and in private practice refused to prescribe contraceptions to unmarried women. And in 2002, Bush appointed this guy, W. David Hager, to head an FDA panel on women's health policy. I mean, these guys are, you know, ridiculous. I mean, this is like primitive stuff. And here, this Steve Schmidt, a spokesman for Bush for the reelection campaign, said this about John Kerry. Only John Kerry would declare the country to be in scientific decline on a day when the country's first privately funded space trip is successfully completed. So I guess if it's about evacuation, these guys are very pro-science. There might come a time where we got to leave and spread the news, you know, spread the mission to the outer space people, because we're going to find them. And, you know, this is like, you know, this is Galileo stuff, Riley. I mean, this is like, you know, think about the stuff that religion has fought against, you know, over, you know, the years of civilization.
The roundness of the earth?
Right. It's, you know, it's fought against thought, free thought, female sexuality. I mean, they fought, you know, Louis Pasteur's discovery and use of vaccines. I mean, think about it. If religion would have ruled out early on, we'd still be doing bloodlettings and using leeches and drilling holes in people's heads to release the voices.
Uh-oh.
I mean, and this is like, this is real stuff. I mean, religion versus science, if you look at the overview of it, You know, just, I mean, even now that you have, you know, factions of the Christian, you know.
I know.
Look, I'm not going to start Christian bashing because you can believe whatever you want, but I think if you're really a religious person and believe in the principles of Christ, you should definitely be questioning the people that believe that God made everything 6,000 years ago.
Well, I mean, do you believe in dissent? That's another question, because there have been people who have kind of strayed off the Bush ranch when it comes to some of these issues, like bioethics and stem cell research. And they were shown the door rather quickly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There was a bunch of people. I mean, like, even like somebody like John DiIulio, you know, the faith-based initiative guy, he resigned because it became clear that, you know, these people are very religiously partisan,
mm-hmm.
you know, on all these issues. They're trying to accommodate, you know, that voting block of people that, you know, one, they are definitely against abortion, and two, they're against any sort of progress that has to do with abortion or using of fetal cells. They're against, they want the death penalty, you know, and they are very much these are the people that this president is beholden to.
Now, when do you think, Mark, it's going to dawn on this president that marshaling all these people and getting all these people to the polls will not by itself win him the election? In other words, he's got that. Let's say for the sake of argument, he's got them, although there's some question about that, too. And we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
What does he do to get the other people on board that will win him this election? Because at this point, these folks, these whether it be you know, the Christian right or whatever, they're not enough. Not by themselves.
Yeah, and also I think that there's going to be a rallying of true Christians who believe in the compassionate teachings of Christ that will realize that these people are an enemy of the state and they're an enemy of their religion because they're extremists. And I'll tell you exactly what I think, and I'll give you some more evidence of what we wouldn't have now if religions had won out after the break. You can also call us on this topic at 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0, and talk about whatever you want, but you know what we're talking about.
And don't accuse Maron of religion bashing either.
I'm not doing it. I'm trying to be all embracing. Come back. Yeah, 43 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Sue Ellicott is out. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270. I got this column that my producer and the two producers put together about religion versus science, a brief overview.
Uh-oh.
And they've got one column as phenomenon, the other column as religious explanation, and the scientific explanation.
Uh-oh.
And we like here, the phenomenon, human life, religious explanation, dirt animated by God's breath and preanimate nostrils, scientific explanation, evolved from apes about 2 to 20 million years ago. Here's another one I like. Oh, here, phenomenon, strange things, religious explanation, miracles, scientific explanation, strange things happen. Mike in Long Island, how are you? Mike, is he there? How are you, buddy?
Hey,
yes,
Mike.
I am.
What's going on?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Okay.
What's on your mind?
You were making a comment about the religious right not having enough people to put Bush back into office. But there are a lot of people that I know personally that are going to vote for Bush. And all they do is spew out this stuff that Limbaugh says, and they sound exactly like him.
So those people are called cult members. They're religious. Yeah. They're robots. They're rush bots.
Yeah.
So I know what you're saying. Now how do you respond to that, Mike?
Well, you know, I asked them if they're doing any better now than they were 4 years ago, and they have no answer for it. And any question you ask them for, they just try to spew out, well, you know, when Clinton was in office, he didn't do anything about terrorism, and they just go on and on. And no matter what you say to these people,
yeah,
they come up with,
that's because they have no real opinions of their own, and they'd rather not do the homework and just listen to somebody fueled by hate.
Yeah, that pretty much boils down. And again, you know, this is a question, I think, of whether you believe that those folks, and I hate to use that term, but those people constitute a majority of the American electorate. I don't think they do. I am a cockeyed optimist,
dude,
about this.
We just got these polls. I mean, look at these polls. I mean, some numbers are coercive, but some numbers, I mean, this is a broad overview. This is a legitimate poll. And really, I mean, in overall performance, you know, 51% of the people disapprove of Bush's overall job, that against 47% who do approve. In the economy, 53% of the people disapprove. 46% of the people approve. Iraq, again, 55% disapprove. International affairs, 55% disapproval rating. Taxes, 54% disapproval rating. Prescription drugs, 50% disapproval rating. Budget deficit, 56%. I mean, these are all high numbers against, you know, Bush's, you know, job performance.
Now, this is according to the ABC News Washington Post poll. And I guess I believe it's either out late yesterday or early today.
So I think that, you know, I understand what he's saying, but I think it's really much easier. I think it's really much easier for people who don't want to do their own thinking and have a certain amount of personal anger or dissatisfaction in their own lives to take on the sort of narrow-minded, you know, misinformed, hateful point of view of a Rush Limbaugh or somebody who's giving them the type of information that makes them feel like, you know, they are part of something, a hateful momentum that is based in falsehoods.
But you know what? Christians, as you mentioned earlier, true Christians are starting to move in the other direction. They are starting to move to counter this little by little, bit by bit, increment by increment, person by person. The Christian community, and I'm not talking about the Christian right now, I'm just talking about the Christian community,
right,
is starting to move and say to people, look, there is an alternate view of Christianity. This is not the only way that Christians behave. This is not the only true Christianity.
Like, yeah,
that's
like
what we're seeing.
Like taking care of people, like, you know, really taking care of the poor, like, you know, being tolerant, like being accepting, like, you know, being sort of compassionate, empathetic people. The teachings of Christ, I think, if read straight on, would probably dictate a fairly liberal point of view.
Now, I would agree with you 100% there, and it does come down to interpretation. What I think is going to end up being the litmus, not a litmus test, one of the things I think that's going to start to convince the Bush people that they are in really deep trouble is that I think this whole constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage, I think it's going to backfire on them. I think it's going to blow up in their face.
Yeah, and it's like there's such a repressive climate with certain types of people in this country that are so frightened. I mean, it really, if you really think about whatever they're afraid of, you know, outside of them taking the Bible literally, I mean, this stuff is going to happen anyways, unless, you know, something horrible happens in this country, which I hope it doesn't, like some sort of, you know, revolt from within. I mean, it has no real effect on their lives if two men or two women decide to get married and raise a child in a house full of love. It doesn't have any effect on, why should they even care?
But see, that's the thing. They cannot explain why they should even care. They have no rational explanation for why any of this impacts on them. If you don't want to be gay, don't be gay. If you don't want to marry a person of the same sex, don't. But don't stop other people who want to make their commitment real from doing that. That's ridiculous.
It comes from a strange type of fear that, like, it's just like everything to these people is part of some slippery slope that eventually everybody will be gay. Everybody will be having sex with animals. All teenagers will be, you know, having sex with each other at age of 12. I mean, it's just the slippery slope denies people their personal morality in that, you know, they're overestimating people's, you know, desire to be just completely lawless and crazy. It's just ridiculous. Their fears are unwarranted, yet they live in them.
Yes.
So we got Harold in Manhattan. How are you, Harold?
Hey, Harold.
Good morning.
What's up, buddy?
Well, I was in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Out off the island.
How was that for you?
Yeah. A couple of weeks ago, and saw this television infomercial about the Constitution Restoration Act.
Uh-huh.
Have you guys heard about that?
No, but we will. Tell us what it is.
It's before both the House and the Senate, and it's started by this Judge Roy Moore from
Alabama.
Oh, the dude with the Ten Commandments.
That maniac.
Well,
yeah.
It seems to be more than the Ten Commandments. They seem to want to limit judicial review of anything that has to do with what they call religion.
Yes.
And that includes things like whether they're gays can get married, or whether God can be in the listed in the Pledge of Allegiance, or the Ten Commandments can be in the court. And their new thing seems to be that the bad people, which they called it, was a religion of tolerance.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, it kind of is like a one-stop religious shop for
people. We got to go, Harold. Thanks for your call. I'm going to look into that.
No, it's important. I remember more. I just thought that was only in Alabama, but you're right. He was trying to do that on a federal level.
Yeah, we'll be back with the liberal agenda. I guess stay on the phone. I guess we'll take a couple more calls. It's nice that you're showing up for us here. So stay tuned. Good morning and welcome to Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley is here. Sue Alcott is out. You're listening to Air America Radio. You can blog now, morningsedition.com. You can email at sedition@airamericaradio.com. We are discussing George Kerry. John Kerry is, talking about ideology versus, scientific
science.
Research. You know, and I think this is a change that needs to be made. I think if Kerry really continues to talk about how the Bush administration, not only in the name of science, but they've, they've let up on restrictions of industrial waste to accommodate, corporate interests. They've denied the fact that certain, greenhouse effects are happening to accommodate corporate interests.
They deleted it from material that is put out by the government.
Right. And they I understand that this administration, because of their religious beliefs, believes that Armageddon is upon us. They don't have to cause it. It's like, what's the hurry? Let's wait it out a little bit. It's about, and this going back to the religion versus science, a brief overview that was put together by our staff here. Here's the phenomenon is President Bush. The religious explanation is the supreme power. The scientific explanation is the Supreme Court.
Very good.
So I guess someone kicked us a little information. We got some a blogger.
Yeah, we got a really good. This is from Goose35. And Goose, thank you very much for this.
He hit us to this.
Yeah. We talked yesterday about the fact that John Lehman, who's a member of the 9/11 Commission, Naval Secretary under Ronald Reagan, said that there were new documents that indicated that at least one officer of Saddam Hussein's Fedayeen in Iraq had met or was a very prominent member of Al-Qaeda. And this would prove that link that Bush and Cheney and the rest of these people have been talking about. Well, according to New York Newsday, the CIA concluded, quote, a long time ago, that an Al-Qaeda associate who met with two of the September 11th hijackers in Malaysia was not an officer in the Fedayeen.
That's this
not
guy,
the same guy.
Shakir.
Ahmad Hikmat Shakir.
And
yes.
This was a relatively common name, I guess, in Iraq. It's like, so it's a different Smith. It was spelled with a Y.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is it. So now Cheney's got to go back to the drawing board and try to fabricate some new evidence that looks authentic. We just found this in the garbage can in Iraq. It was a note that was left by a terrorist for Saddam Hussein. It was here. We found it in the garbage.
But you know what? He's even more sinister than that. What he does is simply say, well, we have the information. He's not going to share what the information is. He's not going to talk about it. It's all classified. It's all too deep for us ordinary Americans.
Well, that's what he's also infantilizing and disempowering the 9/11 committee by doing that. It's a political move for a vice president to say, well, nice work, but you know what? I'm the vice president, and I got a few things you don't know. So thanks for all the effort. Leave the papers that you wrote up or whatever they are in the little basket by my door. I'll try to get to them.
You think Tom Kane's going to be voting for George Bush this time around?
I don't think so. I think he's going to lose a lot of Republicans. I mean, especially the fiscally conservative Republicans who think that he has broadened government more than, Anyways, you know what that is. That's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. So get your notebooks and your pens. Here are your marching orders for today. Pressure Board of Education to have dolphin language taught in the schools. 2, proposed government-funded program that pays children to write books critical of the Bush administration. Children. 3, write distillery demanding they change the name of their product to Johnny Walker African American. Right. 4, openly cheer Nader's choice for a running mate, then exclude him from all debates. 5, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation, quote, just because it's a robot doesn't mean it can't feel love. It doesn't mean that. Those are your marching orders. Do what you will.
Now, Nader did name a Green Party person. And forgive me, I can't remember his name right now.
We'll get it.
I should know. But, yeah, he named him as vice president and increased his chances or enhanced his chances of getting on the ballot in about 22 states where the Green Party already is.
Well, that's what he wants. Oh, so it's not going to change anything.
It might.
Yeah.
It might.
He wants to get the third party going.
Yeah, he wants to get the Green Party going, that's for sure. Coming up in the next hour of Morning's Edition, your ID or your freedom? That's what the Supreme Court says. Plus, Mark Maron's Dream Diary, the countdown to democracy, and the return of the Morning Devotional here on Air America Radio.
New Yorker. Or not. People judge you by the word.
Good morning, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Sue Ellicott is out today.
Hey!
What's happening? So, Riley, listen to this, man.
Yeah, I want to hear this.
I got a mailing. I got a mailing from the Republican National Committee.
Ooh.
All right? They're the Republican National Committee. Dear friend and fellow American, I must alert you to an important matter. At this very moment, a fierce battle is being waged for America's heart and soul. And the decision you make in the next few moments could determine the outcome. But let me explain. Since taking office on January 20th, 2001, President Bush has transformed our party, our country, and our world.
I agree.
Well, he certainly has. He certainly has, but certainly not for the better. Do you know what I mean? I mean, I don't even know how I got on this mailing list, but we're going to talk about it in just a second. As I said before, this is Mark Maron. I am on Morning Sedition. This is Mark Riley here. Sue Ellicott is out today, and we're having a great show. So I get this mailing, right? And here's them plugging the Republican National Committee, all right? Since taking office on January 20, 2001, President Bush has transformed our party, our country, and our world. He has passed two of the largest tax cuts in history, igniting the fastest rate of economic growth since 1984. Let's look at that. Yes, that is true. President Bush's tax cuts were quite large. The first one gave an average tax cut of $52,000 to the top 1%, while 80% of all taxpayers save less than $1,500 in federal taxes. Bush also became the first president in U.S. history, and by some accounts, the first world leader ever to cut taxes during wartime, putting the country's willingness to sacrifice, you know, on the back burner because he knew that ultimately this country would not believe in this false war and the premises of it. Now, the other thing this thing that the mailing says, here we go. And on November 25th, 2003, President Bush and our Republican Congress passed a historic Medicare prescription drug bill, which allows for the first modernization of the senior health care program in nearly 40 years. Yes. Uh-huh. He did do that, okay, but it was pretty historic, especially for HMOs and pharmaceutical companies. Most seniors will pay more using a Medicare drug card than they could buying retail with no card at all, according to a House Government Reform Committee study. And once we get to the 2005, seniors are locked into the cards they choose, at which point companies can jack up the prices at will.
Kind of like cable television.
Yeah, so the dude, you know, it's just like this is what they're selling in their mailing. In addition, President Bush has signed into law the most important education reform in a generation. Yeah, that's true. He did sign it into law. He just didn't fund it. This year, the Bush administration is spending $9.4 billion less than what is needed for No Child Left Behind. The administration plans further cuts in education funding for 2006. So at the end of this thing, it says, send us your money because, you know, here we go. Your pledge of support of money will help President Bush further his agenda to revitalize the economy, secure our homeland, safeguard Social Security, win the war on terrorism, build a stronger, safer, and better America. So far, he's 0 for 5.
Now, let me ask you, how much do you have to donate to get a personal meeting?
On here, it only gives you the option
of 5
see,
gazillion.
Wait, let's see what you get. If by joining the RNC with a membership donation, $25, $35, $50, or $100 or more, you will receive a complimentary subscription to Rising Tide. That would be, of course, the prophecy for the next flood.
I guess. Really.
Rising Tide, the RNC's quarterly magazine of political news and commentary. We're all going to drown, except for people who can get on the ark. All right. The second one is access to the RNC's toll-free members hotline. What do you get with that? For questions and comments and access to the RNC website for the latest and breaking GOP news. We should probably send them a little money and get at least on the hotline because it'd be kind of fun to call from here. All right, the other one. Oh, a personal RNC membership card and a lapel pin to recognize your generous commitment to our party and country. Also, an armband is available. 7, access to exclusive members-only events hosted by the Republican National Committee website.
Is that at Scores?
Yeah, oh yeah, that's going to be at scores for the big convention.
Yeah, for the
here
convention. Yeah.
But here's what accused liberals here. Look at this. You see, the liberals are retrenching. We're retrenching, people.
Yes.
How's it feel to be retrenching? And now they're hungrier than ever to undermine President Bush. Yes, that's true. And his agenda for a better, more prosperous America, because we think it'll be better with our agenda.
Yay. Yes.
Just consider this quote from a prominent liberal activist.
That would be you, Mark Mary.
Now the president is out of control and threatens American democracy and the peace of the world. Bush must be beaten in 2004. Not only the nation, but the world depends on it.
Who said that? Nelson Mandela?
I think we've
or
all
some
said
other
it.
Nobel Prize winner?
Here, I'll say it again. Now the president is out of control and threatens American democracy and the peace of the world. Bush must be beaten in 2004. Not only the nation, but the world depends on it. That seems reasonable to me. I don't know.
Oh, they didn't quote who it was?
No, they just said a quote from a prominent liberal activist. But I'll agree with that. How is that? You think he'd
that
be
could
a little
be Moby?
More, yeah, because you think he'd be a little more slanderous.
Yeah.
So what do we got, man? We've got some other sort of Patriot Act related stuff coming down from the Supreme Court, but it's not the Patriot Act, but it's certainly going to bolster the Patriot Act's power.
I'm scared by this. If you have ever been tempted not to give your name or remain silent when stopped by the police, think again. It's a new day here in the United States, folks. The United States Supreme Court has ruled people who refuse to give their names can be arrested even if they've done nothing wrong. The ruling was 5-4, close, indicating obviously a very, very sharply divided court. And you have the usual suspects among the five. You have Rehnquist, you have Scalia, you
Kennedy.
Have Kennedy.
Thomas.
You have Thomas
O'Connor
and Sandra Day O'Connor, who freaked out when she thought Al Gore was going to win the 2000 election, by the way. You heard about
she
that?
She freaked out?
She was at a party, apparently, and freaked out when somebody erroneously reported that Gore had actually won Florida and thereby the election.
Well, that because she had already been briefed on what they were going to have to do.
Yeah, and then she said, oh, man, am I going to have to stay on this court forever or what? Now, the dissenters, John Paul Stevens, David Souter, Stephen Breyer, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
So the deal is that if you get pulled over and they go, hey, dude, well, they wouldn't say that. What do I say dude for? What am I, the Big Lebowski?
Dude, what's your name?
But well, if they say, you know, can I have your ID? Can I have your name? Apparently, which I didn't know because I'd never really pushed it because I guess the last time I got, you know, pulled over, I was in high school. Well, no, I mean, I get pulled over. You get pulled over by a cop for speeding. They go, can I see your driver's license? I guess you can say, you know, you can't unless you tell me what I was doing. And if they say, well, we just feel like you look bad. And then I could say, well, that's not enough. I'm not.
They're not
going to
argue with you. You know what they're going to say the minute you say that?
What?
Get out of the car.
Right. I'm taking you down.
I'm taking you down. That's it. You're done. You're in jail.
But they could do that without this law. So this is saying that if you don't give that,
if you don't say anything, you can be arrested for keeping, you know, they tell you have a right to remain silent. Well, not anymore. You actually have to give them your name.
And with in this day and age, with the computers they have in their cop cars, I mean, if you give them your name, they can know more than you even know about yourself about you. They can find out your credit rating. They can find out where you were born, who your parents are, what your past offenses are, if you have current, outstanding warrants or whatever, you know, without any suspicion whatsoever.
Well, look, how about if your name is Ahmed Hikmat Shakir? He was mistaken for somebody else, wasn't he?
Right, absolutely. How about all those people on the voter rolls in Florida?
Yeah now, I should say that Shakir is the guy that John Lehman, the 9/11 commissioner, said was the Al-Qaeda operative who worked for Saddam. Turns out it's a different Shakir. So obviously, if you give your name Mark Maron and they, you know, put you in the database, there could be another Mark Maron someplace out there that's a raving criminal that you could, in fact, be mistaken for.
This aggression will not stand, man.
That's right. Absolutely. And, you know, this was an interesting case because it was a cattle rancher who brought a guy named Larry Dudley Hibble or Hybel. He refused to produce his name or show ID after being asked 11 times for it by a cop. Apparently, someone called the police because he and his daughter were having an argument.
In a truck,
yeah.
That's it.
And he said, look, I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not telling you, I'm not telling you who I am.
Right.
And
what
they ran him in.
But that's an interesting thing. Like, you know, what do you got on me? You know, I'm not doing anything wrong. You can't have my name.
Yeah. Well, he was convicted of a misdemeanor, and that's what the court upheld. This has some very, very deep implications. One of the things people don't, I think, really think about when it comes to this is that when you are stopped by a police officer, you are dealing with an individual who is armed by law. Now, that may not bother or trouble most people, but as an African-American, I could tell you what it feels like to have a cop kind of stop you. I once was, when I was real young, walking through the Times Square subway station here in New York, and had a cop, like, grab me, I mean, literally, on the arm, pull me aside and say, where are you going? What's your name? Blah, blah, blah. And I said, what's the problem? Well, you look like a guy that that did a robbery, and we have a description out of.
What?
Oh yeah.
But so they're just basically saying you're a black guy. He was a black guy.
Yeah, yeah. And don't think, ladies and gentlemen, that hasn't happened.
We're taking your calls on this issue. 866-303-AAR0. 866-303-2270. Blog us at morningsedition.com. Call us if you're a cop, a lawyer, or people with a name. We got the Dream Diary and more here on Air America Radio next. Eighteen past the hour. Good morning. It's Morning's Edition. I'm Mark Maron. Mark Riley is here. Sue Ellicott is out today.
Good morning.
We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. We are talking about this new law that was the Supreme Court has ruled that you a police officer can ask and you must give your name without being accused or suspected of anything and the implications thereof. You can also blog now at morningsedition.com. I have with me right now, I am looking at the scribblings that I made last night in my waking consciousness. This is my dream diary for today that I will bring to my therapist on Thursday. It's the summer solstice. Hundreds of us are gathered around Stonehenge waiting for the sun to rise, and we're nude. It's like Woodstock without the acid and without the Country Joe and the fish. If you've never stood bollocks out in the English countryside before dawn, it is a chilly experience. There's a bit of shrinkage, that's all I'm saying. All right, good thing it was dark. Actually, it was really beautiful under the canopy of twinkling stars, and it would all be truly magical as long as you don't, focus on the smell. These people worship the sun, not the shower, you know what I'm saying? Far into the distance, the first rays cracked over the horizon. The light slowly spread across the faces of the crowd. Da 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 da. And there we were, bathed in glorious morning sunlight, shining through the mystic circle of Stonehenge. It is perfect. I feel reborn. Just then, a guy in a conductor's uniform walks up and says, all right, show's over. Break it up. Nothing to see here. He walks up to me. $50, pal. What? I was just watching the sunrise and being reborn. You didn't think that was free, did you? The oil companies get their cut and somebody has to pay off Bush's deficits. $50 now. I didn't have any pockets. Everywhere around me, people were producing wads of cash. I don't really want to know where they were keeping it. But I got charged with failure to pay for the sunrise. What kind of country is this? And indecent exposure. The cops handcuffed me and dragged me off into a police van, nude. I have to sit on a cold metal bench in the van. Great. More shrinkage. I woke up and my bed was filled with shriveled raisins. Man, that was a weenie dream. Hey, 866-303-AAR0, 866-303-2270. Well, we got a call here from Nancy. Hi. Oh, no, that's Will. Hey, Will, what's going on?
What's up? Whoops. We got Nancy.
I think we lost. Who's there?
Hello?
Hi, Nancy.
Hi,
Nancy.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm good. We got a little confusion on the phones there. What's on your mind?
Right. I was just listening to you guys earlier about the religious thing you were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And, you were saying that a lot more religious or true Christians were moving toward,
mm-hmm.
the other side. And I think that's absolutely true because my parents voted for Bush the first time, and now they absolutely hate him, and they're voting for Kerry.
Specifically because he's misrepresenting the faith, right?
Exactly. And because they don't like a lot of things he's doing with the war and a lot of different things, and they see that he's lying. So
I think
you're absolutely right.
What pushed him over the edge exactly?
Well, they really don't like a lot of the religious things that he's bringing into the government because they don't like that, and they think it should be separated.
Right, so they believe that religious belief is a personal matter and that the separation of church and state should be maintained.
Right, exactly. And they also see, the problems with the war and how it's causing, a lot of different, employment problems and
absolutely.
Deaths and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely think you're right.
Oh, well, great. Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling, Nancy. Thanks a lot. The number is 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270.
It may be maybe 5-6 years down the road when Bush is an unelected ex-president for 5 or 6 years, that he may say to himself one day, I never should have gone into Iraq. I never should have done this thing. because it killed my presidency.
Oh, it's just, it's chaos, and there are people that, you know, speculating that they're never going to be able to leave. We got a guest coming up that wrote a book about being embedded in Iraq. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
He's his name is
Evan Wright,
and the book is called, where is it? Oh, Generation Kill. And I, you know, I read about this. I read segments from the book, and it's going to be a pretty fascinating interview. That's coming up in just a little while. We lost a call from a guy, a black guy, who said he's 6'2", weighs like 200 and something pounds. I'm sorry we lost a call.
Oh, that was Gene.
Oh, we got him. We got him. Gene, you're there. What's up, Gene?
Hey, Gene.
Yeah, hi.
Lay it down. What's going on? Tell us what your story.
Okay, my name is Gene Davis. I'm 6'2". I'm about 250. I have dreadlocks.
Yeah.
Now, I've been driving for 21 years, and I've never had a moving violation.
Yep.
But I get pulled over 6 to 8 times a year.
Yeah, that's intense. Have you ever denied giving your name? Have you ever said, why are you pulling me over?
Yes, let me give you this. The last time I got pulled over, I had dropped my car off at the shop, and when I went back to pick it up, my wife took me, and I drove back to my house, and she had to go to work in the morning, so she waited for me to pull in. We have a circular driveway.
Yeah.
I pulled in, and she pulled in behind me. When I got out the car, there was a cop car sitting in front of my house. And we asked him like 6 times, what did he want? He had the windows rolled up, and they were tinted. And then when I walked towards the car, he flashed the light on the car in my face, and they got out, and they took me across the street, and they had my wife in front of my house, and he pulled out a pen and a pad, and he was asking me what was my name, and they were asking my wife what was my name.
Yeah.
I was like, why do you want to know my name?
Yeah.
And he told me that if I didn't tell them my name, that they were going to take me and my wife to jail.
Now, this was in New York, right, Gene?
Yeah, on Long Island in New York.
Yeah.
I was in my driveway.
In New York, like in Nevada, they, in fact, already have a law on the books that says they can lock you up if you refuse to give your name. And that was what the Supreme Court upheld in their ruling.
That's what the cop told me. He told me he was going to take me and my wife. And get this. I said, listen, I kept asking you, what did you want?
Yeah.
And you wouldn't answer. He lied and said that his window was broken and it wouldn't roll down. So then I gave him my name, and he went into the car and got on his computer, and he rolled down his window. I said, I thought you said your window was broken.
Yeah, you should have made a citizen's arrest for him lying.
No. Then Gene would have got arrested for resisting arrest.
Ugh.
Yeah, then know what he told me?
What?
I need to know who you are. And I'm like, why do you need to know who I am? I mean,
you're a 6'2" black guy. That's why.
No, in the past year, I've been pulled over at a red light.
Yeah.
I'm not even moving.
And
then the cop accused me of talking on the cell phone, which I have a speaker phone on my cell phone. I wasn't even on the phone. So.
Oh, they're being hard
to get you.
Yeah,
I mean,
a little profiling going on. Thanks a lot, Gene. Thanks for your call. I guess that happens a lot. So I didn't understand exactly. So this law is already on the books in many states.
It's in 21 states.
Okay.
That the law is already on the books. And what the Supreme Court did was uphold those states' laws so that now cops in those states can, in fact, lock people up.
And I
for
guess,
refusing to give their names.
Right. And the real threat is that, you know, along with, you know, the amount of information they can get at just a couple of punches on a button, that the infringement on our privacy can be pretty extreme and almost, you know, just in a car with a BlackBerry, for God's sakes. You know, I mean, you can pull up, you know, it's pretty.
It's scary. It is truly scary because it is that slippery slope that so many people warned us about, you know, back in 2000, Mark. There were a lot of folks who talked about how the courts were going to impact American life if Bush got elected president. Now, the Supreme Court, obviously, he has not made any appointments to. But when you start looking at where he's going with these district courts all over the country, from Virginia to San Francisco, you see that he is stacking these courts with conservative jurists who are going to uphold just these kinds of rulings.
And that's where it starts, on the school boards as well.
You know,
there's some religiousness going into the school boards. And I was just, what was I just thinking about? Oh, we should be able to, everyone should be able to carry a BlackBerry or on their phone, you know, be able to get online. And when the cop asks, you know, for your name, you should make sure you get his name and do a search on him too. So then when he comes and tells you what you're guilty of, you can make sure that he's got a clean record. That's just a little idea. David in Denmark. Denmark, what's going on, Denmark?
Hey.
Oh, hi, how you doing? What's going on?
You've called before, right?
Rainy. It's based in Denmark. But anyway, I've called before, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember once I was like 16, I lived in Jersey outside New York, and got stopped by a cop. He was really totally, you know, just wild. Like, what's your name? Show me your ID. And, you know, I was 16, so I said, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, screw you. But
yeah.
I realized afterwards, after being an adult and thought back on the situation, that sometimes, you know, they're in life and death situations, they have to find somebody. So, you know, there might be it could be a kidnapping situation, whatever. And I realized that's not the majority of what's going on, and I think the laws are horrible. But, you know, every once in a while, cops will be, you know, not the thing just stopping somebody. And this
right,
and that,
right.
You know?
They're actually...
But they can, you know, you have to respect the police, too. Sometimes they're in kind of wild situations, and you know, it's hard to judge what the frame of mind is at the time. You know?
Right, and sometimes they take your name, they take your ID, and they say, thanks, we had something going on here.
I mean, and that's logical. But you know what, David, there is... let me give you an example of a situation, Mark, that happened here in New York a few years back.
Okay.
Earl Graves, the publisher of Black Enterprise magazine, has a son named Butch, who's about 6'4", goes about 250, same as our man Gene here.
Yeah.
The cops in Grand Central Terminal were looking for a guy who was my height and a little less than my weight. They busted him.
Right.
6'4".
For what?
And said he matched the description.
Yeah. See, that's been going on in this country for a long time. It's you know, the racial profiling thing is always an issue, and it's a real thing, obviously.
It's demented, yes. Is what it is. And again, I say this as someone who has experienced it. Still to come, the countdown to democracy, the morning devotional returns, plus Evan Wright, author of Generation Kill, takes a different look at the war with Iraq. This is Air America Radio.
Good morning. It's Morning Sedition. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Air America Radio. You can blog us now at morningsedition.com. Email us at sedition@airamericaradio.com. Our guest, who is in studio here, was embedded with the elite Marine 1st Reconnaissance Battalion during the first months of the war in Iraq. We are pleased to have in our studio Evan Wright, author of Generation Kill, which was based on a three-part series that appeared in Rolling Stone. How you doing, man?
Good morning, Mark and Mark.
Good morning. Hey, thanks for being here.
So why'd you call your book Generation Kill?
Well, it really sort of goes back to the Greatest Generation. For about a decade, everyone's been talking about how the greatest, we've rightfully honored them, but I think that in honoring them, we've kind of forgotten that war is about killing people.
Right.
And we tend to think of World War II now almost as a Hallmark card of the sailor coming home and kissing his fiance.
Right, and D-Day celebration.
Yeah, and the big band music, mm-hmm, and what a great mm-hmm. time. And I think as a nation, we kind of forgot that war is a horror for those who participate in it.
Mm-hmm.
So I named the book Generation Kill for that reason. And the other reason I named it that is after the first firefight that the unit I was with was in, their platoon commander said to me, these guys have no problem with killing. And he pointed out that these guys... In past wars, Marines didn't fire their guns as easily as these guys did. The rates of fire were much lower.
So now that's an interesting idea, because when I saw the movie Black Hawk Down, that it was very it's kind of a brilliant movie in its depiction of war as sort of this corporate necessity as opposed to like this American loyalty thing. It wasn't patriotism. Did you find that these guys were just trained killers that were their allegiance was specifically to the forces and not necessarily to anything else?
Well, it's a really interesting question because. Getting back to the title, Generation Kill, by the way, that title also is sort of ironic because they did kill very easily in a sense, but they paid a price for it. They thought about it a lot. They were very thoughtful. And them being trained killers sort of for the corporate interest or whatever doesn't quite fly. What does happen to soldiers is they have no choice in what they're going to be told to do
mm-hmm.
ultimately. So all debate is a little bit moot.
Uh-huh.
Now, Evan, this unit that you were with was the 1st Marine Reconnaissance Battalion. Describe what their role and function was in Iraq.
Their job was to race ahead of the main Marine forces in Iraq and find ambushes by driving into them.
Okay, so this was some dangerous work these people were involved in.
Yeah.
And these were generally kids, I guess. From
19 to 22 was the average age range.
Wow.
And they never questioned what they were doing. They never had a problem with having to necessarily, kill everybody in a group of folks that were trying to ambush.
Oh, well, you know, if you're at, because I was with them, and if you're getting shot at by a group of people with guns, it's very easy for them to return fire. But the one thing one of the Marines said to me toward the end of this is, he was a big Bush supporter, but he said, I'll be very mad if we don't find any WMD, because we've killed a lot of people. I'll be pissed. And I haven't talked to him since, and I'm wondering what he's thinking now.
Wow.
So what? Now you were in a vehicle, just sitting in, an armored vehicle. How did that work?
When I arrived, I was with this unit. The other reporters dropped out because they didn't want to go where they were going, and all the reporters that were embedding, most of them were carrying a lot of gear and cameras and whatnot. I didn't have any of that. I just brought paper. So they put me in the very front unit. And they said, this Humvee has a little bit of armor on it. And I thought, that's a really good thing. I later found out it was the Point Humvee. It went ahead of everyone else, so that's why they got a little bit of armor. Everybody else was in open Humvees.
Wow.
And the armor on ours didn't really work. We got 23 bullet holes in it in the first couple of days of engagements.
Well, there was a situation, and our guest again is Evan Wright. He is the author of Generation Kill. There was a story here that police departments throughout New Jersey had donated old bulletproof vests to be used in Humvees that didn't have sufficient armor.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, in this case, they wanted to have open Humvees, and they took the windshields out because they wanted to fire their weapons more easily from their Humvees.
Uh-huh.
These are very macho guys. These are like the elite of the Marine Corps.
Wow. Could you share that story about, I read some excerpts from the book, the story about the order to kill whoever was there?
Yeah. It was, the team that I was with was involved in seizing an airfield, and as they were racing onto it, they believed that there was armor on it, and their commander told them everyone is declared hostile.
Right.
And that's a new, in Vietnam we had free fire zones. This is a new politically correct way of saying shoot anyone that moves. And the 19-year-old gunner to my left actually gunned down two young Bedouins, 12 and 17.
Oh, yeah. And what happened? What was the follow-up?
Well, it's
that?
An interesting story because the title Generation Kill, Are They Just Ruthless Killers?
Well, hold that thought, and let's come back after the break and finish up that story. We're talking to Evan Wright, the author of Generation Kill, and please call us with questions for Evan Wright if you'd like, 866-303-2270, 866-303-AAR0. He's a guy who's been there and knows what's happened. So we'll be back in a minute here on Air America Radio. Good morning. It's Morning Sedition. I am Mark Maron. It's 42 past the hour. I'm here with Mark Riley. Our guest in studio is Evan Wright. He was embedded with the Elite Marine 1st Reconnaissance Battalion. His book is Generation Kill. We're talking to him. We're taking your calls at 866-303-2270 about anything Iraq and specifically about, what it's like to be embedded and what went on. We're in the middle of a story with him, and we're going to get to that in 1 second. Right now, it's time for our countdown to democracy. As the deadline for handover of power to the Iraqis approaches, we'd like to explore various issues and opportunities the Iraqis and Americans will face. Today's issue is preserving your national monuments. All right, okay. Leaders of Iraq, when establishing a new democracy, it's important not to destroy those venerable old buildings that truly reflect your national heritage, like Abu Ghraib Prison. You may see it as a blight on humanity. All right, easy, easy. We see it as a possible source of revenue. Why, in America, hundreds of thousands visit our historic correctional facilities annually, and some like them so much they stay for 3 to 5 years on the slightest pretext. People will come to look on Abu Ghraib as a symbol of a simpler, more graceful age, and compare it alongside such monuments to man's ingenuity as Andersonville, Auschwitz, or the Black Hole of Calcutta. Oh, easy, easy, please. Bring the kids. Of course, you can't have Saddam's palace back because we're using it as a party space. All right. Hey, palaces are undemocratic anyways. You don't need it. All right? Okay. Good luck, and God bless. This is day 8 in our countdown to democracy. Live free or die. Yes, I know. Sorry, it almost feels a little weird to be doing that.
In front of a guy who's been embedded.
I'm jumping under the table right now.
So we're in the middle of this story about this order that was basically to say, everyone is hostile, kill whoever's moves.
Yeah, let me just say that, you know, one of the points of Abu Ghraib, the story is these reservists who become immoral and do bad things,
yes,
and who knows why. But in my, what I saw personally was Marines often questioning orders that they thought were immoral and taking actions to sort of remedy that. Mm-hmm. And one of those instances was we were racing onto a field, an airfield, the seas that I was in the lead Humvee of this platoon. The team, they were ordered that everyone is declared hostile, and that meant their commander had said, everyone is declared hostile, meaning it's a free fire zone, which is the old Vietnam era term, and shoot anyone that moves. Now, most of the Marines held their fire, but a 19-year-old in the vehicle I was in opened fire on two Bedouin shepherds, and he probably might have thought that they were armed. But they seized the field. An hour later, we're back at the camp, and these women are dragging the body of a 12-year-old, and they carry him to the lines of the Marines, and they unroll this blanket that he's in, and the youngest boy had 4 bullet rounds in his chest and stomach. He was alive. The Marines started treating him, but they realized he needed to be medevaced, and they went to their commander, and they said, can we medevac him? And he said, absolutely not.
Yeah.
It will jeopardize our security situation. Who knows? I actually thought that perhaps he didn't want to medevac him because then it would create a broader inquiry as to why he was shot. That was my suspicion. I can't
right.
validate that. But anyway, the team leader of the unit I was with, earlier on, I'd seen him handing out humanitarian rations to kids before the shooting, and he was joking. When he gave them the food, these starving kids, he was like, thank you, vote Republican. And I thought, that's kind of a callous comment.
Yeah.
Well, this same guy, his team had shot these boys, and he came up, and he saw the mother, and he started to cry. And he said, I'll do anything to help you, through the translator. When the treatment was denied, he led a sort of mutiny of his men, these enlisted men, and they carried the body of the most seriously wounded boy down to the tent of their battalion commander, who was a lieutenant colonel, kind of like God in the Marine Corps. And they said, if this boy is going to, they put him down, and they said, if this boy is going to die on your order, then you're going to have to watch him die.
Oh, my God.
And,
that is intense, man. And, yeah. And what happened?
Well, since there was a reporter there, the battalion commander
medevaced immediately.
Suddenly, the security situation changed, and he was medevaced. But and I don't know really what happened to that kid.
Right.
But to me, that was a great story because I really came to care about these Marines. And they say everyone asks, are the reporters co-opted? I don't think I was. I wrote about very ugly situations. But why I cared about them is I wrote about them doing these things like shooting civilians, but I saw them dealing with it as humans. And
what about morale? I mean, you know, there's been, you know, clearly this was a war that was instigated on false pretenses, you know, from all evidence. And it's never going to end, you know, from all evidence. And there's going to be a military force there for years to come. And it's seeming, you know, to most people that it's a tremendous mistake. Now, and we've gotten reports here that, you know, that morale was pretty low and that a lot of these guys were disappointed and felt betrayed by this president.
You know, it's a tough issue because most of these guys, it's as a volunteer army, and I was with this very elite unit, they really want to serve. And they want to feel that they're doing the right thing. So I sometimes think morale isn't as low as it's being reported, but it's because, you know, it's almost like denial. Like,
yeah,
people don't want to say, hey, I've been here getting shot at for a dumb cause. They want to believe they're still doing the right thing.
In order to live with themselves, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I hope that war opponents understand that.
Right.
And they don't see themselves as victims. You know?
Oh, yeah, no. You know, we're pretty pro-military on the station in terms of being, you know, sympathetic to the situation that they're in. But we're very much here, you know, the war is clearly, you know, unjustifiable.
Yeah. Now, I hear from another friend who was just over there that a lot of people in the army have been smoking pot. And it's a huge, in the Middle East, you know, hash is sort of everywhere.
Yeah.
So I wonder who's going to be coming back from this war and what state they're going to be in.
Huh.
Very interesting. True.
Yeah.
Evan Wright is our guest. He was embedded with the elite Marine 1st Reconnaissance Battalion. The name of his book, Generation Kill. He was there during the first months of the war in Iraq. Did you, when you heard about the Abu Ghraib prison scandal, did you kind of compare the people that you were with and your experience there with what you were hearing about coming out of the prison?
Yeah, once again, I was there when an officer was attempting to bayonet or taunt with a bayonet some captured Iraqi POWs. But as I mentioned before, the enlisted Marines were attempting to stand up to this officer and prevent him from behaving as he was. So again, I understood. It was like this. I was not surprised, but it was different. And what I witnessed, it was an officer in doing this behavior, and it was the enlisted men standing up to him trying to prevent it.
Mm-hmm. How do people react, Evan, when they've been, for example, part of this 1st Marine Reconnaissance Battalion for a period of time, they are told, let's say for the sake of argument, that they're getting out in May 31st. And suddenly, May 26th, they get orders that say they're going to be actually there for another 6 months to a year. How do they react to that?
Well, there was one guy in my book, Sergeant Fawcett, who had been stop-lost into the first part of the invasion. And, you know, he was bitter about it. But on the other hand, you know, Marines are a little bit different than the Army, and I've been embedded with the Army, too, in Afghanistan, in that they kind of do want to serve in a war, and, you know, as strange as it may sound to civilians. So they weren't as bitter about it as Army people are, because the Army sells people on, go join the Army, and you can go to college and learn job skills.
Yeah, yeah.
The Marine Corps sells people on, join the Marines and become a warrior. So it's a little bit different demographic that they're drawing from.
So quickly, last question. The handover is coming up, and what do you, I mean? Are things going to change here? I mean, what do you see?
Well, one of the things I wrote about recently in the New York Times was, as we invaded, we went so quickly with this stripped down sort of blitzkrieg style warfare that we didn't have time to pick up the wreckage as we moved through the country, and a lot of that wreckage consisted of perhaps several million tons of munitions that Saddam had amassed. And we just drove. I literally saw the unit driving past mountains of this stuff. And after, you know, in the aftermath, the insurgents went back and, you know, picked up a lot of these munitions. And what's killing Americans now in Iraq and a lot of Iraqis are the munitions that we let fall into the insurgents' hands.
Yeah, on top of the ones that, you know, we gave to Saddam years ago.
Years ago,
and
yeah.
The ones that the Soviets left there. I ask you all that all the time. I ask Riley that. Is that just how many, you know, how much weapons, how long can they last with the weapons they have?
Well, if you think of it, if, say, they have, by conservative estimates, a million tons of weapons, an aircraft carrier, our largest aircraft carrier weighs about 100,000 tons. So that's like 10 aircraft carriers' size of
that's
weapons.
That's mind-blowing. Yeah. Thanks a lot. Evan Wright, the book
Appreciate
is Generation
it.
Kill. It was really interesting talking to you. Thanks for coming by. We'll be back with the Liberal Agenda, the morning devotionals back, and other stuff here on Air America Radio. Good morning, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley on Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
Now, we got an email here, and since I said it, I ought to clean it up.
Well, let's do the devotional first.
Oh, the devotional first,
we haven't done this in a while.
Yeah.
Dear Lord, we've been talking a lot about science versus religion. I need a ruling, Lord. Now, if you created us to be curious about our world and to invent things that make our life better, where does that stop? Is it true that God helps those that help themselves, or does God help those that help themselves to my stuff? I need my science. Science has been good to me. I mean, without these glasses, I can barely find my porn. And that's another one of the inventions that they're trying to take away from me. Who knows? I might need stem cell research someday to cure me of some disease so I can live a long, happy life, Lord, with my porn. So don't let the right wing take my science, Lord. I've been cutting back on the porn. I might want to say that to the Lord. Lord, my wife's in town, and I'm pulling back from that. Science is my friend, especially the fast-forward button and the freeze frame. But again, honey, if you're listening, I'm not doing it that much. And don't check my cookies. Now, that's the good science. That's for listening, Lord. Amen. So what are you? Let's clear it up. What's that
All
email
right, here's
say?
The email. Mark Riley said, if you don't want to be gay, don't be gay. Being gay, as far as I know, is not a choice. I'm gay. If there was a therapy pill, counseling, genetic correction, hormone treatment, or anything that would make me straight, I would do it. I don't know why anyone would ever choose to be in my situation. I hope you all would stop portraying being gay as a choice. Now, my apologies for that. I was talking about the religious right wanting to be gay, not actually gay people. And I was talking about the lifestyle, not the actual being.
Right,
a person being gay. Obviously. But I understand where the emailer is coming from. My bad. My fault. I didn't mean to portray gay as being a choice, because I don't believe that. I know that there are a lot of people on the religious right who say, well, all you have to, you know, we've converted homosexuals. We've made them into straight people.
Right.
I don't think so. But that's just my opinion.
Right.
So the emailer is right. I shouldn't have said it that way. I was trying to be, I don't know. Was I trying to be humorous? I don't know. Maybe I wasn't. I don't know. I want the emailer to know that I understand. Although I must say, most gay people I know don't have a problem with being. They would not take a hormone treatment or something else to make them straight because they're happy with who they are.
Yeah, I mean, and also now with the whole metrosexual thing, I think everybody's kind
of gay. What is that? What the hell is metrosexual?
That just put a lot of what it's done is made straight people gay.
Is that what it is?
No, I mean, you know, there was a time where, you know, we all didn't have to go to the gym to look good constantly. We all didn't need six packs and abs and, you know, and nice haircuts. I mean, look at my hair. What is wrong with me? You know what I mean? Like 15, 20 years ago, like now I gotta go in and say, I want a faux hawk. I mean, apparently, you know, I just, you know, I'm going to be on Tough Crowd tonight.
Uh-oh.
And they gave us all magazines to review and they gave me Out magazine. And apparently my haircut is out. All right, so like, there's this whole. I think metrosexual basically means that, you know, if you're a straight male, it's better if you look gay.
Is that what it is?
Is that kind of what it is? I mean, I'm not completely clear on it, but gay culture has really infused itself into, you know, everything pop culture wise. You know.
Well, you know, I'm kind of glad I got off the bus before all of this latest pop cultural stuff. I know a lot of gay people, have hung out with a lot of gay people throughout my life, so it's I come from a different perspective as far as that's concerned. Now, yeah, that's it. Some of my best friends are black, well, gay, you know, Jewish, whatever.
I think it's kind of exciting that I can, you know, wear chaps now and weenie rings and you know, nipple clamps, and I can finally get to wear my leather captain's hat. I mean, I wouldn't have been able to do that if it wasn't for the
The music's coming.
Honey, are you listening?
She's on her way here. We're not finished here on Morning's Edition. In the next hour, comedian Jim Gaffigan previews Comics for Carrie, which he'll be doing with a certain other comedian we know, plus the Presidential Palm Pilot and Recovery Corner, all straight ahead on Air America Radio.
Hey, I'm Mark Maron with Stu Ellicott and Mark Riley here on Air America Radio. It's 6 minutes past the hour, and this is Morning Sedition.
Today, Jim Gaffigan from the Comics for Carrie gig I'm doing tonight. He'll join us in the studio to be funny. He's a very funny guy. Plus, we'll have the Palm Pilot, the PDB, the Liberal Agenda, and unscripted comedy I'll make up off the top of my head, if we're lucky. That's coming up. Right now, I got Mark Riley here with me. Sue Ellicott is gone today. You know, it's so weird. The cat was like one of our associate producers, whose job it isn't to go get coffee.
That's right.
Right. Said he was going to do it because he was going to go do something else, right?
Yeah.
And then he comes back and said, I didn't have time. And I got all psyched for coffee. I just did a Crystal Presto. he's our board operator. But, like, it's so weird. I feel like such a child right now because he came back and said, I can't do it. I'm like, then you shouldn't say that you're going to. You told me that we would have ice cream, and now there's no ice cream. And I'm not going to do anything you want me to do ever again. I'm upset, man. I got excited to get juiced. I like getting juiced up. You know,
well,
it's
there's
all
hope.
I got.
There's still
it's all
hope.
I got. And now I'm reading this article. This has always fascinated me, but this was in the paper. We weren't really going to go into it. But Brian Mueller, this is from the Associated Press. Right? Brian Mueller, an Army Bomb Squad team leader who served on a security detail for President Bush, said he was dismissed from duty after deciding to tell his commander that he's gay. All right. Now, this is after we have this don't ask, don't tell. All right. So he told, obviously, and then, you know, he was dismissed. Okay. So now, but it seems that the figure, however, you know, is like there's in Afghanistan, 1,227 discharges in 2001. All right. And since the don't ask, don't tell was adopted in 1994, nearly 10,000 military personnel have been discharged, including linguists, nuclear warfare experts, and other key specialists. And this to me is ridiculous.
For being gay? All of those people were...
Well, I mean, that's what this article insinuates, and it's probably true, but I mean, clearly not all of them are telling. So is somebody sitting there going, oh, I can tell. Did you see the way that guy did? No, he's definitely gay. We got to get rid of him. And first of all, the thing I don't understand, like, they can teach a Marine how to fight on any terrain. They can teach a Marine how to go about food and water. They can teach a Marine how to withstand torture. They can teach a Marine how not to fear death. But the thought of a guy sitting on the top bunk thinking, God, I want to do that guy down there, is just too frightening for them to deal with. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's just too brain-bending and horrifying. And then I ask myself, well, if it's so terrifying to them, why haven't our enemies caught on to this? You know, I mean, could you just imagine platoons of Marines, you know, marching towards the enemy, you know, and the enemy just, you know, drops their pants and starts running at us, you know, and be like, oh, no, you know, yeah, get out of here. It was horrible, Sarge. They tried to do us. You know,
a whole different summer of love.
I think they got little Joe.
You know, I actually had a friend who's passed away now who was a gay Marine DI.
Uh-huh.
All right. And, I mean, you know, Marine drill instructors are supposed to be the scariest people God ever put on the earth. And I remember one time we were someplace and a guy called him out, called him a faggot.
Uh-huh.
And this guy said, okay, you want to get your behind beat by one of these faggots? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to say it.
Yeah.
You know, he became...
He just freaked out.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, he absolutely did.
And then you start to think about, like, especially after, you know, the Abu Ghraib stuff and some of the torture stuff and some of the things they made these guys do, maybe if they were a little more open-minded, all this weird repressed sexuality wouldn't come out in the form of torture.
Yeah. That's absolutely true. Now, Mark, you know, there are so many things going on in the news today.
Yes.
Some of them really strange. Some of them really salacious. We'll get to them in a minute. But the Supreme Court says you must talk when stopped by a cop or you're going to jail.
Right.
The who's gal for you.
If they go, what's your name? You got to say, my name's Mark Maron, or else, you know, that's it. I guess the threat it's clear to me. We were talking about this before. 22 states has always had this in place, right?
Yeah.
It's 22 states where if you don't give them the information about who you are without any suspicion, I guess the real
nexus that you don't have to actually have done anything. You don't have to have been a bank robbery suspect or whatever. If they stop you and they say, what's your name? And you remain silent, which you might assume might be your right as an American. Not anymore. By a 5-4 ruling, the Supreme Court says those laws are valid and they can, in fact, incarcerate.
So this obviously encourages more racial profiling. It encourages and supplements the Patriot Act nicely. It encourages a certain invasiveness that, you know, some people feel, and I think rightly so, is too permissive into our personal lives. Because just judging on what one can get, like an officer of the law, if he just says, what's your name, for no reason whatsoever, he can go back to his car within seconds, have, you know, everything that, you know, that you don't even know about you. He could have your credit reports. He could have, you know, obviously past offenses, you know, outstanding warrants, who you're married to, you know, what the jobs have been, where you live. I mean, it's the reason that this is a questionable maneuver. It's not even a maneuver, but the reason this is a questionable law is because of how much information they can have on you, you know, immediately, and you become a suspect even if you weren't a suspect. I think it's a little invasive.
But you know what's scary about this?
Yeah.
We are only a single terrorist act away from widespread support for this kind of thing. That's what scares me. That all it takes is one thing to happen inside this country, and people will line up and say, you know what? We're willing to give you our names, and everybody should be willing to give you names, because if you're not a lawbreaker, what are you afraid of?
Yeah, but that's, you know, I've always had a problem with this, because I knew cats, you know, after 9/11 said, you know what, you know, just corral up all the Muslims and get rid of all of them.
Mm-hmm.
They're all suspect. And it's like, you know, there's certain risks you have to take in a democracy to make it, you know, to leave it and let it be a democracy and continue to be as such. Yeah, that's all fine and great right now, but once you amend the Constitution and start changing rules to accommodate this type of invasiveness, what you have is, okay, well, we solved the terrorist problem, but now we're coming after everybody who has looked at porn this month. We're coming after everybody who eats yogurt. We're coming after, you know, everybody who has, you know, a certain type of hearing disorder, or people who have AIDS, or, you know, it could be anything. I mean, once the Constitution is amended and these things are made okay, who's to say how it's going to be misused in the future? And that completely diminishes, you know, the one of the principles of democracy.
Absolutely. Now, this is some better news for you.
Yeah.
Bush, approval.
I can't believe it.
Oxymoron.
Yeah, finally people are waking up. Isn't it amazing that, like, James Galbraith was right. This is a guy we have on our show a lot. He's an economist out of Texas.
Yes.
And he said, one of the last times he was talking to us on the phone, is that, you know, that Bush's approval ratings will continue to drop, that, you know, that the highest approval ratings he had were just after 9/11, and that's understandable, but have been progressively dropping ever since, no matter what happens in the news. They thought that they were going to push a buzz on this, that this guy was going to get a real buzz off of ratings. Reagan's death. They thought they were going to like just let him glom on to the spirit of the dead Reagan, and that they would lift him in the polls. And it barely lifted him a point, if any, but it didn't stick. And now it's all going down. People are waking up. They're starting to realize, as Galbraith, you know, prophesies with his theory, that, you know, look, you know, people are going to, you know, see the truth eventually. They're just going to see the truth. And right now, you know, we've got numbers. We've got numbers, and we've also got proof just in today's news that clearly he's not winning the war on terror. I mean, if you look at today's news, you've got like three or four stories. Attackers kill minister in Chechenian border town. Islamic insurgencies. Insurgency boils up in Thailand. Muslim insurgencies. New Al-Qaeda cell leader trained in the Saudi military. That's today. The new king of Saudi Al-Qaeda. You know, insurgencies going on there. And it's clear that the war on terror is being lost. And after this break, when we come back, I'll give you the rest of the poll numbers from ABC News and Washington Post poll results. So stay tuned for that. Hey, it's 17 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. I'm here with Mark Riley on Air America's Morning Sedition. We have a blog now at morningsedition.com. Sue Ellicott is out today. You can call us. It looks like people are calling. Didn't even ask you to call, but we love to hear from you. 866-303-2270. 866-303-AAR0. I promise you some numbers. This is from ABC News, Washington Post poll, as of yesterday. Bush's overall performance, 51% disapprove, 47% approve. On the economy, 53% disapprove. On Iraq, 55% disapprove. Here's another one. The war with Iraq has damaged U.S. image. 76% believe it has, and that's up from 63% in July. On taxes, 54% disapprove. On prescription drugs, 50% disapprove. Budget deficit, 56% disapprove. You know, clearly, America is waking up. This secretive administration that constantly tries to spin things that doesn't make anybody within their administration, you know, pay the price for their acts. I mean, you've got a vice president out there saying that there was a connection between Al-Qaeda and Iraq. We got a news report today that speculation made 2 days ago by Representative Layman.
Commissioner Layman from the 9/11 Commission. And it turns out that was a load, too. And we want to thank Goose35 for turning us on to that. These are not, Mark Maron, the numbers of a winner. They're not. They are simply the numbers of an incumbent president who may not be there much longer if these numbers don't start to turn around. Now, you know, everybody in politics will tell you at some point or another, well, I don't look at polls. I don't pay any attention to polls. I don't listen to what the polls tell us. But we know from this president that he reacts almost instantaneously to the polls. We have seen this happen before.
Oh, he'll flip-flop, you know, at the drop of a point.
Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, he's going to have to flip-flop on a whole bunch of stuff, or he's going to have to find some way to pump up the economy other than what he's been doing up until now.
Maybe he can just forget to, you know, log some numbers down.
No taxes for anyone until November.
Because now those state – and by the way, I'm going to do the Palm Pilot in a couple minutes. I know this is usually the time we do it, but you know what? I spaced it out and we're in the middle of something. You know what? Let's go ahead and do it.
Let's do it.
All right. Here's the presidential Palm Pilot for today. This has just gotten to me. Here's the presidential schedule. 7 o'clock a.m., wake up, stay on message. Outer space should be privately owned. Get Halliburton on it. 9 a.m., listen to Clinton book on CD. Become oddly aroused by his silky Arkansas accent. 11 a.m., move Guantanamo prisoners to Abu Ghraib and Abu Ghraib prisoners to Guantanamo. Just a mess with their heads, man. 1:20 p.m., meet with Prime Minister of Hungary. Good idea. Let's eat. 1:30 p.m., eat. 3 p.m., write anonymous mean reviews of Fahrenheit 9/11 for RottenTomatoes.com. 3:30 p.m., Google myself, Lycos myself, Yahoo myself. Wait, half these sites are porn. 4 p.m., speak at White House. 4 p.m., speak at White House Black Music Month reception. Tell Ja Rule and 50 Cent to chill. Peace out. 6 p.m., try on spacesuit for possible late November mission. Leaving. 7 p.m., thank Gardner for helping me out of spacesuit. Again. 9 p.m., fall asleep listening to Clinton book. Bill. Soothing. All right, now back to the news. So we were talking about these poll numbers. The State Department numbers, the real ones, that word botched before.
Botched. Doctored, not fully vetted.
According to Colin Powell. You got that sound, Chris? You got Colin Powell?
Yeah.
You do? Can we hear it?
Can we hear
it? Last week?
It's a numbers error. It's not a political judgment that said, let's see if we can cook the books. We can't get away with that now. Nobody was out to cook the books. Errors crept in.
Yeah, errors. No one's out to cook the books. I mean, now. Now is the key word there. Now.
Now.
You want to take a call? Or you want to?
Well,
there
are a couple other things I just wanted to get to. First of all, we will tomorrow be running those numbers from the State Department as to terror incidents worldwide. And we're also going to have some coverage of, you remember those memos that Donald Rumsfeld didn't want to release and now is going to?
Yes.
We'll talk about that, too. Unfortunately, we'll be off the air by the time all of these dirty deeds are done. And speaking of dirty deeds.
Yes.
Mark Maron, I don't want to get too deep into your personal business, but what do you think would be the worst thing an ex could say about you in court papers? Let's say they gave you there was some court papers on Mark Maron. So what's the worst thing one of your exes could say about you?
I don't know how, not my ex, the outside of that I left.
That would do it.
I think I got really drunk one night and peed on our bedroom floor. But that's about the worst thing.
That was the worst?
Yeah, I think so.
Not anything about having sex in clubs while others watched?
No. If people are watching and there's, that's just not just me.
Oh, okay. Well, are you familiar with a guy by the name of Jack Ryan?
Should I be?
Well, he's running for the United States Senate in Illinois. He's running against
of course
someone we spoke to. You remember Barack Obama?
Oh, yeah. We talked to him on the phone. That was great.
He's the Democrat. Jack Ryan is the Republican.
Yeah.
Jack Ryan is was married to a certified babe.
Yes.
That babe being, what is her name again? Oh, Jeri Lynn Ryan.
She was in Star Trek?
She was in Star Trek. Yeah. She was also in Boston Public.
Mm-hmm.
Now, according to divorce papers, Jeri Lynn Ryan alleges that Jack Ryan demanded that she have sex with him in clubs while others watched, in public.
What was with people who are running for office? Like, don't you know that you're going to be running for office and that maybe in this day and age where everyone's got a camera in their earlobe and people are willing to sell you out for, $10, even if it is your wife, that you don't do something bad, or try to keep it clean so it doesn't come back at you. So that's great. That's another success for the Democrats.
I don't know. I'm wondering if this, there have been some people who have called in the Republican Party who have called on Ryan to get out of the Senate race at this point, which would be a little difficult. Some other people are still supporting him. The governor of Illinois said at first that he supported him and then backed away because he didn't know about the sex in public part.
Right. He didn't want to be part of that. Like he didn't want to be implicated, like he was one of the guys watching or something.
Well, this is a touchy thing for the Republicans. The Republicans are the morals police of us all. And this is what they're up to. I'm waiting. I hope all of you Republicans who are listening to us today, if you're listening on the net, however you're listening, when you come to New York, be careful, because me and Maron are going to be out in the street during the Republican convention.
Monitoring.
And we're making a list and checking it twice. We're going to know who's naughty and nice.
Yeah, we got a cop calling. Speaking of police, Joe in Pennsylvania, how are you?
Hey, Joe.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Pretty good, man. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to comment on some of the earlier stuff. You guys are doing a great job. I have to tell you, being a liberal policeman is difficult.
Yeah, I bet.
I have to go to work every day, and most people think Rush Limbaugh is Jesus, and I don't see it that way.
Including Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, yeah, right?
Him and his brother fight about it all the time because his brother thinks he's Jesus, too. Go ahead. Yeah.
The thing I wanted to talk to you about, you had the 6'2 black man with dreadlocks who called in. I work in a very white area.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see a lot of minority population.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to respect what your 6'2 man with dreadlocks said. I've had experiences where you pull over a fella who's from an urban area, a black man, say, I noticed very, very distinctly that the fellow reacted in a way I wasn't accustomed to in the area where I work.
Right.
The fellow was afraid. I mean, he was icy. He was nerved out.
Yeah.
And, I really respect what that fellow's saying.
Yeah.
And I felt at the time that I pulled over, this happens pretty frequently, I think, with urban people who have a different experience of police.
Black people?
Yeah, I want to say black
Latinos.
People.
Yeah. Asians sometimes.
Latinos, you have a little more difficulty with communication sometimes.
Right.
You know, when you see a lot of folks who are, you know, immigrant or maybe they're illegal and they don't have documentation and you know, communication becomes a problem. But I've seen the reaction of an urban minority that gave me pause. Really made me, you know, unhappy. And somewhat sympathetic to that 6'2" black guy with dreadlocks.
I think that was Gene from Long Island.
Yeah.
You make a very good point, and I think that sometimes people have to see that there is a difference in experience between, in some cases, the way black people react to police and the way white people react to police. In many instances, certainly in areas like New York City, where we are, that reaction is based on bitter experience. I have a very good friend who lives right over the bridge in New Jersey. Used to drive back 25 years ago, used to drive a Cadillac.
Mm-hmm.
He would get stopped. He wouldn't get two exits down the New Jersey Turnpike before they had him pulled over.
Just for being a black guy in a Cadillac?
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable. Derek in Indiana, how are you?
Hey, Derek.
Derek,
I'm
quickly.
Good. How are you?
We only got a minute, second. What do you got on your mind, buddy?
Jack Ryan. The guy had sex with Jerry Lynn. I mean, who's going to tell him for that?
Not only did he have sex with her, but apparently in public and other people were involved.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be hailed as a bad boy Republican hero. He's going to stand up at a press conference and say, yeah, so, have you seen her?
Thanks a lot for your call, Derek. That's true about Republicans. It's like they'll dump on Clinton for years. He's back in the news, and they're dumping on him now. And I think some of it has to do with they didn't really think that Monica was that hot and it wasn't worth doing it.
I'm wondering, because remember that a lot of people who dumped on Clinton had skeletons in their own closets, including one guy who called Clinton a scumbag who had a 13-year-old child born out of wedlock.
Yeah, these guys, they're all hypocrites. They'll just jump on board. I read an article on AOL last night that some of them are so excited that he's back in the news to dump on him again.
Up next, comedian Jim Gaffigan joins us in studio. The Presidential Daily Briefing plus the liberal agenda. Don't go away. This is Air America Radio.
Oh, my God. It's morning sedition. I'm Mark Maron. I'm here with Mark Riley. We have a guest in studio who is going to be performing with me on Comics for Kerry tonight. It's a campaign fundraiser in support of John Kerry's presidential campaign. 7 o'clock tonight at Caroline's. And it's only $1,000 per ticket. So if you can afford that.
Is it $1,000?
No, it's not. That's Jim Gaffigan. Jim Gaffigan is in the studio
thank you.
Hey,
it
Jim.
It is good to be here.
It's $150 general admission, and that's, of course, going to a good cause. So if you're uncomfortable with that kind of money, be comfortable. That's going to help support Mr. Kerry's presidential bid. Richard Belzer will be there. Eddie Brill. Jim David has been on the show. Dean Edwards from Saturday Night Live. Susie Essman from Curb Your Enthusiasm. Gaffigan's on. Judy Gold. Mark Maron. Very funny.
Mark Maron. That guy's funny.
Liberals, all he is.
Yeah, inconsistent, but funny, Mark Maron. Sorry.
A lot of anger.
A lot of bile. I've softened up a bit, though. I got married again. Did you?
I also got married. I don't know about you. My wife changed her name. I know some women have a problem with that.
Uh-huh.
But I wanted her to have my old girlfriend's name. So I went that way.
And she takes did that come up during sex? Like, oh, I'm sorry. Could you just be her?
Yeah, it was very... It's amazing.
You got any kids yet? How long have you been married?
I got a kid.
You did?
I actually, my wife had a kid about, I guess, 6 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. I really should meet it, though. I've been busy, you know.
On the road.
Actually, the baby's beautiful. Looks just like my wife, except it's black.
Okay. Wait, I don't...
That's silly. Actually, people say the baby looks like me, but then again, with my oversized, pudgy head, I look like a lot of babies.
Yeah, you know? Big baby. You should be wearing diapers right now, I think.
It's not an amazing accomplishment.
So have you been out there on the road a lot?
I've been doing a fair amount of it, but, you know, I try and stay in New York just because, you know, you do the road too much, you just go crazy.
You know? Out the hotel room, just sitting there. Oh. You know what's weird about being a comic is, like, you know, if you're just a normal, you know, you have a life, and it's not like we live that exciting life here.
Right.
But for some reason, when you're on the road for like 3 hours, 3 hours into your hotel room, you're like, what am I going to do? I can't even function. I mean, I don't know who I am anymore. I got to go out into the mall or something.
Well, also, it's like every night there's an excuse to just get wasted. You know, like the whole, like, you know, the restaurant, the service industry, that culture is like, hey, we worked for 2 hours. Let's have 10 beers.
You're
like, oh my gosh.
We deserve a reward.
Yeah, hey, I have a wildly addictive personality. This is good for me.
I'm going to live here. Can I move to this town? You people are great.
Then you need a vacation from just going on the road and working an hour a night. It's sad. It's very sad.
Back when I drank, I used to come home from the road just sort of sweating toxins and liquor. And my wife didn't like me to drink, my first wife. And I would just get off the plane just looking horrible because I'd been up for days. I'd been on the road. And I'd say, yeah, it was a pretty rough flight back. I don't know. The plane was a little wobbly. I got to take a nap for a day.
It's unbelievable. That's why it's like I love doing the acting work. It's like you just clean living.
Yeah, you can get your own trailer. Yeah, we're talking to Jim Gaffigan. You might know him from his many appearances on Conan O'Brien, Letterman as well, yes.
Yeah.
Recently had a half-hour Comedy Central Presents special.
There you go.
You have a website. That's
JimGaffigan.com. I thought I'd go with my name.
You've got like, you put out a CD every 10 minutes, don't you?
I do,
you know,
every 10
yourself,
minutes.
Man. How many CDs you got, like seven?
No, I got like four because I put out two.
Yeah.
And then
the first two were only 10 minutes long.
Someone was like, hey, the sound quality is pretty bad. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, I should probably redo those.
So now you have special edition. The first ones are like the bootleg Gaffigan.
Those are like, you know, the Grateful Dead in Arizona. Yeah.
This is when he does a 15-minute punchline.
This is unbelievable. No, it's like my wife did all my CDs, so it's, yeah, I gotta.
What do you mean? You bring her with you to tech?
No, we did it on a mini disc the first time, and then the second time, you know, we did, you know, we hired, paid the $200 for someone to sit in a booth and use their whatever recording.
Well, that's
device.
Big. So you put a little money into the actual
and
career.
And I take all that money and I donate it to my nicotine gum addiction. That's humiliating, isn't it?
Yeah, how long has it been since you smoked?
About 9 years. And, you know, there's crackheads laughing at me. They're like, I mean, I waste money on crack, but nicotine gum? Come on.
You've been on the gum for 9 years?
I'd say about eight, at least.
I've been off them for, like, almost 5 years. And, like, sometimes, like, my wife is smoking again. It's amazing how it'll creep up on you, and just like you think that everything will be solved with one cigarette.
Yeah, it's crazy. I don't know.
What else you got going on? Any other demons eating at you?
No, I'm just, I'm trying to do the acting and the stand-up. You know, it's fun doing both. I mean, I wish I was a film director, though. Just in everyday life, so when someone was telling me a boring story, I could just go, and cut!
We'll be right back with Jim Gaffigan. We'll talk about the event we're doing tonight, and more funny. So come back to Air America Radio. Good morning, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley and Jim Gaffigan in the studio on Morning Sedition here on Air America Radio. We're talking about comedy. We're talking about acting in a minute. Right now it's time for the Presidential Daily Briefing. That is the highly classified top secret document that crosses George W. Bush's desk every morning. Today's PDB from the intelligence community is titled, Clinton Book Plays Literacy Card. Mr. President, it has come to our attention that former President Bill Clinton, codenamed King Weasel, has written a 950-page memoir, which will be available in bookstores today. While this poses little threat in itself, it does create the expectation that one day you will have to do the same. This means you must confront your longtime nemesis, the English language. We understand your animosity toward our mother tongue, as it contains so many words derived from the French. But we got back at them with Euro Disney. Anyway, do not panic over the prospect of writing your memoirs. The bookstores are filled with the noodlings of the semi-literate. Besides, dozens of young writers will line up to convert your pitiful stammering into coherent sentences. Remember, even your father's dog, Millie, wrote a bestseller. Of course, Millie could focus, but we don't want to draw unfair comparisons. When you do get started, we recommend large print, wide margins, triple spacing, and lots of photos. A pop-up would be nice, but we can discuss that later. Plus, and this is important, Under no circumstances should you record the audiobook yourself. If available, get Patrick Stewart. He'll probably be available. Respectfully, Office of Homeland Security.
Now, you said something about Clinton. I think we may be talking to one or more.
Oh, yeah, later. He calls us sometime. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, kind of.
That's pretty
cool. It's kind of him. So we're doing the show. Jim Gaffigan and myself are going to be on this Comics for Carrie thing tonight. It's a big show. The Bells is going to be there. Judy Gold is going to be there. Jim David has been on the show. Dean Edwards.
There's going to be some celebrities, I'm sure.
Susie Essman. Are there? What do you know?
I don't know. You know, the Bells, he's always, you know, there's always like a couple. Like, last time I ran into Bells, are like, I turned to my right and Sean Connery's there. And I was like,
Sean Connery?
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
He usually hangs out with some of those Law and Order people, like you know, Jerry Auerbach or what's that guy's name? Maloney?
Maloney.
Chris Maloney. I've met him a couple of times.
Or Mariska. She might be related to your wife.
Mariska. Yeah. I know, people always have a hard time with my wife's name. And the funny thing about my wife is she'll let people call her whatever they make of her name. Like, her name is Mishna, but she gets, like, Misha, and she'll be like, yes. Mishka, uh-huh. I'm like, babe, it's your name. You can stand up for your name. She's like, ah, it's too much trouble. They're never going to get it.
It's wild being, you know, married to the beautiful woman. Life's a little easier for the beautiful people. Can we admit that? I mean,
it's unbelievable.
Think about it. If a stranger smiles at you and they're attractive, you think, oh, they're nice. But if the stranger's ugly, aren't you kind of like, what the hell do I want? Get away from me. Some people are too beautiful. Like Halle Berry, she really is. You know, she's so beautiful. Whenever she's in a movie, I find it hard to follow the plot. Like when she was in Monsters Ball playing that poverty-stricken woman, the entire time I was watching the movie, I was thinking, well, why doesn't this woman just become a model? Yeah, she's beautiful. She can get some pictures together. Hell, she could be the next Halle Berry. She is Halle Berry.
I, you know, it is weird. Like, my wife is beautiful, and you thank God that they're with you every day.
Yeah.
Every day, I thank the God that I half believe in that my wife is with me, because she could do anything.
Yeah.
She could, you know what I mean? They it's like this weird genetic commodity that they could do anything.
Oh, particularly in America. I think, you know, we worship beauty. And if you don't believe me, check out our British television show. Yeah, you ever watch the BBC? Your first impression is, where did they get all these ugly people? These are the people that got the acting jobs? I feel like I'm watching an Orville Redenbacher commercial. I mean, we're superficial. Remember when the Cold War was ending and Gorbachev was dismantling the Soviet Union? The whole world was stunned. But everyone in America, we were like, hey, he's got that red splotch on his head. He's dismantling nuclear power. Yeah. Can he cover that up? Or I can't even hear what he's saying.
That's deep political commentary in America. What about that splotch?
Yeah. Yeah. No wonder he lost.
We're talking to Jim Gaffigan, comedian. Now, I've seen him on Comedy Central, David Letterman, Conan O'Brien, or be the owner of one of his many CDs.
My 10,000 CDs. It's embarrassing.
You were on a lot of television. A lot of people, if they don't know you, you had...
I've been the dumb white guy on many shows. Yeah. I was the dumb white guy on that 70s show.
Yeah.
I played the dumb older white guy in that.
Yeah. And then you had your sort of half your own show for a little while.
Yeah. Welcome to New York. I played the dumb Midwestern guy. I've done the Law and Orders where I play like the dumb pedophile or the dumb, you know, guy who doesn't, you know, cremate bodies from a crematorium. And then Sex in the City, I played the dumb open door dumper.
An open door dumper?
Yeah, that was glamour. I had to audition for that. You know how, like, Sex in the City, they always had, like, different, you know, guys that had problems?
Right.
I was the guy that, like, took a dump with the door open. That was kind of, and I actually had to audition for it. I went in there, and they were like, okay, and I'm like, I've done this before. And they're like, yeah, if you could just do the lines. There was, like, two lines.
What were they?
I don't know. They were like, hey, you making coffee? And it was like two lines. And they're like, I guess we could see him on the toilet. It was so humiliating.
You didn't have to act like you were sitting on the toilet.
No, it was just like, and I had to truck out to Queens and everything. I was like, it took me an hour and a half to get here just to.
Whose date were you on the show?
I was Cynthia Nixon's date.
Oh,
that's that picture on your website.
The clash of whiteness you've never seen, me and Cynthia together.
So you had a bit part in Three Kings,
Three Kings.
Which is a genius movie.
Yeah, that's a great movie.
Are you still buddies with that guy?
I'm decent friends with him. It's, you know, he's you know, out in L.A. and
what's he? Is he? Did, are you in his new movie? Is there a new movie?
No, you know, he does. He does. He's always working on a couple things, but you know, I'm just lucky to be in that one movie.
Yeah, I thought it was good. I thought it was good because he sort of like it was. You could definitely see it was you, and you had a couple of moments.
Yeah, no, it's not. You know, once like a friend throws you a bone like that, you're like, look, if you need me to mow your lawn, but I'm not going to ask for anything else.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
know what I mean, you're like,
well, it's weird because Cameron Crowe put me in Almost Famous for that 45 second powerful 45 seconds of cinema. You know, lock the gate. You know,
yeah.
and. But it resonated with people. You know, I mean,
yeah.
people remembered
yeah.
it.
Still walk
you know,
up to you. Yeah, I remember that.
Well, no, I got, they go, who are you in Almost Famous? And I go, lock the gate. And I go, yeah. But there's a part of me that really thought, like, well, from here on out, I'm going to be in every Cameron Crowe project.
Yeah.
And that hasn't happened. Cameron, if you're listening.
Well, no, it is ironic when you get, like, your first role in a movie. You're like, well, it looks like it's a gravy train from here.
yeah. And then you're like, wait, I'm a comedian. We're the two-line guys.
Right.
You know, we're the, like, is that all you want with that? Or do you want cream cheese? Okay.
yeah, no, it's like, I always play, like, the, you know, it's as a character actor, which is a nice way of saying the ugly guy.
Yeah.
Hey, we're going to have you play the ugly guy. Oh, that's not humiliating at all. You play the guy, like, in 13 going on 30, I play, like, the she has a crush on a kid when she's 13, and then she grows up, and the guy's like, you know, a cab yeah. driver, and he's yeah. just a pathetic fool. That's me. and you know, it's like, it's great. I mean, I'm a whore for the money.
Yeah.
But you're sitting there, and you just walk away, and you're like, yeah, I played the loser guy. That's it. Come and see me tonight. Come and see me tonight.
Yeah. You want to hang out for another
sure,
segment?
Sure.
All right, we're
going to
hang out some more with Jim Gaffigan. We're going to be at Comics for Carrie tonight, him and I with a bunch of other people. Let's take a few calls if you want. 866-303-2270. Bill Clinton might be here. He might be calling in.
Okay.
So stay tuned. Good God, we're coming in for landing. It's Morning's Edition. Mark Riley, Mark Maron here. Sue Ellicott is out. Jim Gaffigan is in the studio. Jim Gaffigan, the comedian you might have seen on Comedy Central Presents, David Letterman, Conan O'Brien, episodes of everything.
And tonight on Comics for Carrie.
Comics for Carrie at Caroline's tonight, 7 o'clock. If you want to go, it's me and Jim and Belzer and Eddie Brill and Jim David and Dean Edwards, Susie Essman from Curb Your Enthusiasm. Tickets are $9,000. No, it's $150 general admission. And if you want to come, come. You know, we were just talking earlier about we get into a little trouble with religion sometimes. I get accused of being a little too critical.
What do you mean we?
I'm sorry, not Mark. You know, because I am sort of, you know, on the fence, leaning towards atheism.
And there you go.
And we get, you know, I'm sort of critical of the Christian right.
Right, right,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I don't honestly know that much about the Bible. I haven't read it because I'm Catholic.
Yeah.
But my wife, she's like really Catholic. She's like a Shiite Catholic. She's
yeah.
really. But I, you know, we all know Jesus was a carpenter. But you know, do you think Jesus was a good carpenter? Because we don't know. You know, people could have been. You know, good thing that Messiah thing worked out.
Yeah.
He built a shed for my cousin. One piece of crap. And the entire time he's like, I'm the Son of God. Well, right now you're building a shed.
yeah.
So hop to it, Jesus.
So did you read? You know, Clinton's got a book out, and apparently a lot of people are sort of down on it, and of course there he is on the phone, William in Chappaqua. How are you, buddy? How are you handling the bad reviews, my friend?
Well, you know, it's a little disappointing. I like to make people happy.
Yeah, well, apparently it's like it's a little so as President Clinton. Oh wait, there's your better half, Bill in Harlem. How are you, Bill?
Hey, morning, everybody.
Hey,
how are you, Bill?
Pretty good, man.
Look,
bad
I'm everywhere.
Yeah,
I'm every place. Me, all the time, baby.
But the reviews haven't been that good, President.
You know what, Mark?
Yeah.
What's life without a little friction? Machiko Cacatani, if you're out there, baby, I forgive you. All is forgiven. It's going to be all right. Everything's going to be fine. I got to rest up going out on the road. A lot of people to see. Got to press the flesh.
But some people don't like the book. They think it's long and boring and...
Well, you know, that's till they meet me.
Yeah.
William wrote that piece of crap anyway. He really cares.
Oh, so he's going to blame it on you, huh?
Well, you know, he's got his thing going on. But, you know, yeah. It goes on and on. Man needs a little less conversation, a little more action.
Yeah. Do you talk to Monica Lewinsky at all? Why'd you...
Well, I mean, he doesn't. she calls, you know. I screen it.
Yeah.
I've been there and done that.
You do it because you could.
Well, because I could, you know. I ain't proud of it. It's not in the top 10 or nothing. You know, what happened.
Not in the top 10. Thanks a lot, President Clinton. Nice to talk to you.
All right, buddy.
Take it easy.
That's the two halves of President Clinton that called separately.
That was scary.
Yeah. Getting it from both sides.
Yeah, right.
So let me plug our gig one more time. Richard Belzer, me, Jim Gaffigan, Eddie Brill, Jim David, Dean Edwards, Susie Essman tonight, Caroline's Comedy Club, 7 o'clock p.m.
Jesus is going to be there also.
Jesus is coming.
Yes.
He follows me around. Oh, there's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Get your notebooks and your pencils. Here are your marching orders for today, good liberals. 1, pressure Board of Education to have dolphin language taught in the schools. 2, proposed government-funded program that pays children to write books critical of the Bush administration so he can read them. 3, Wright Distillery demanding they change the name of their product to Johnny Walker African American. Please. 4, openly cheer Nader's choice for a running mate, then exclude him from all debates. 5, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation, quote, just because it's a robot doesn't mean it can't love. There you go. Can't feel love. Either way, unquote. All right? So there you go. Do what you will. Have a good day. We will talk to you in the morning. Take it out, Mark Riley,
It's time for us to get out. First of all, let's thank Jim Gaffigan for
spending
the time at this ungodly hour of the morning when we're getting out now, and you can't even go to a bar and get stinking drunk.
That's sad.
I know. It truly is. Coming up on tomorrow's morning's edition, we'll give you the full briefing on the real State Department terror report and the real Rumsfeld memo on torture. Plus, we'll talk to a former Guantanamo Bay press officer who's also a stand-up comic. Anyone here from out of town? That's tomorrow's morning's edition here on Air America Radio.